Cheers, guys!
Yay! Yay!
Wow.
As you can see, viewers, we're in a celebratory mood today because Jen.
Jane. So we have the lovely Jane Grey here today.
I'm just going to read it out.
Hi, Jane. Yeah. Jane Grey here. Hi, Jane. Jane Grey.
Jen can't comment on. All right. As you can see, people, we're in a festive mood today, celebratory mood.
Fist.
Because Jane is here Jane to Grey. Tell her life story.
Hello.
We've just had lunch with Jane and Jen and Kaz and Tugger. And,
an eventful lunch.
It's four pages. Let's see how much we will get through, but it is.
So yeah, Jane.
An eventful life of twists and turns and some kinky dimensions.
I mean, where do we start?
I'm here for the kinky stuff. I just want to tell you from the beginning, I'm here for the kinky stuff.
Stay tuned for the kinky stuff. Yeah. Yes.
Yes. So, Jane, where were you born?
I was born in Edinburgh, but my parents are English, and they moved up to Edinburgh before I was born. I think my mum, who's very much like me, very spontaneous, she's like, right, I'm going to bloody Edinburgh. And then my dad was like, yeah, okay, I'll come too. And then... that happened.
Where's your Scottish accent gone?
I know. Everyone thinks I'm from Bristol now.
All right. Born in England, though.
Yeah, Edinburgh, classically, canonically, born. Is in England, yeah.
You got me there.
You said
your parents moved to Scotland.
A place called Scotland.
Yeah. I've heard of it.
North of the Watford Gap.
Yeah.
Outside Hackney. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm so sorry.
When you come outside of Hackney, I'll get a bit lost.
Yeah. Take me back. Yeah. Yeah. I have been living in Hackney for a while. So, yeah, I grew up in Scotland, but yeah, no accent anymore, I suppose.
Yeah.
I think that's probably posh school and now living in
London. But if you go back there, do you get the accent again?
Oh, it comes back extremely.
Okay. Like, I see that's what I'm talking about.
Glaswegian, that's like really strong. Like, I don't come from there, but that's really nice. But I don't come from
there. That.
Yeah. So you I don't got, think you I ever sounded like that.
You got it locked. You still got it.
So when you sent us the stories, you started with private school.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think I'm an only child, and I think my mum never had a good education. And my dad had this like sort of decent job going when I was starting to grow up in software, although he's a musician at heart. I think they were like, right, well, we'll spend money on her education. But I think now it feels like such a like a reverse stigma, because like you don't want anyone to fucking know that you went to private school, you know. It's like, no, because I don't come from money, I don't come from a background like that. I just was lucky enough to sort of do well and like got in and all that kind of thing.
You're one of the lucky ones.
Yeah, but that's totally it. Like, yeah. It is insane. Like, you shouldn't have to pay for education.
No,
like,
definitely
it's
not.
It's nuts. I totally disagree with it. And I hate the elitism, and especially with Toryism and, you know, this sort of club that comes along with that. And also then, if you don't come from that, then you're not part of that either. So you're I think I grew up in this sort of limbo of not being, like, from a specific kind of background, you know what I mean? Like, not wasn't working class, but
how
I wasn't
your friends classed you mean?
Way around. But I think I was quite lucky with when
did they look at you like a posh kid then, because you went private school?
No, not in that way. Like, I think I've always managed to fit in sort of anywhere grown up in, but that's probably because
that's how
like
you
I had to growing up anywhere I can find myself. Yeah, so it's interesting. Like, I'm so grateful for my education. It was a really nice school. Like, I had the best time, and you know, a lot of people don't have a good time at school, and it was my home for a long time.
It's fortunate.
Super fortunate. Mm. So, I mean, yeah, but if it was up to me, everybody would have the same level of education. That's not too much to ask for, is it, really?
Yeah, because I did talks in state and private schools.
Yeah.
And the kids sometimes read excerpts in the state schools. It's hard for them sometimes to read. But in the independent schools, they're very confident.
Yeah, that's totally where I get it from.
Is that where you got your theatrical skills from?
I guess I also just like come from a family that was quite like outgoing and everything like that. And I'm an only child, and both my parents were like, do whatever you want to do. Like, they're pretty gregarious people as well. And yeah, I was never shy. So that makes sense in a lot of ways. What did you say?
About your theatrical skills. Oh, where did they come
from? Actually, my grandma, do you know, I don't know if you had to do this when I was applying for like normal uni, at one point I was just going to go study psychology because I didn't get into drama school on the first go because it's a bloody nightmare. So I was like, right, I'll go and do psychology or something because that sounds fun. And you have to write a personal statement. I don't know if that exists anymore or whatever, but you kind of have to like write about yourself, like, I'm great, but not that great. Like, I'm really modest, but I'm really great. And you have to like have like an opening statement. And I think I wrote
something. Did you have to write it to the
university? To the university. To be like, let me in, I'm great. Right. It's such a load of wank. Anyway, yeah. I opened with the fact that the previous week, my grandma had told me, my dad's mum, she remembers when I was about 18 months old and they would look after me and I'd be sat in front of this mirror. Just like, you know, a little toddler, like fake crying like this, like, and then being like, is that any good? Seeing how convincing I was,
from younger.
Crying. So, for sure.
Professional.
Just straight from day one, yeah.
From day one.
Yeah, definitely.
Can I pause it quickly?
Yeah.
You've got lipstick on your teeth.
No, fuck. I knew I should have done the lipstick.
Because if not, we would have gone the whole podcast noticing that.
I shouldn't have bothered with the lipstick.
Get it off quick before Jen wants to take a break.
Come on, do it. Time.
Okay, right, yeah. Yeah, right, carry on. Just tell me.
All right, so we've been having a laugh, but tragedy befell your family when your mum, they tried for a sibling.
So I'm an only child, but when I was 7, my mum had a stillbirth and it was really horrendous and we almost lost her as well because she lost a lot of blood and there was a lot of mistakes were made, let's just say, by a lot of people leading up to that, doctors and people made mistakes. So like now I think there would be like lawsuits about the whole thing, and there have been since, like it's a much more talked about topic, but 25 years ago it really, really wasn't. And also when it happened, like, it was totally like a catalyst, I think, for the breakdown of my parents' marriage in a lot of ways, because they just like were left to deal with it and get on with it, weren't offered any support. And it's really tragic that I think in our society, like miscarriage, stillbirth, or just any kind of problems with mental health or not being able to deal with stuff is just like not talked about enough. And 25 years ago, it totally wasn't.
Were you able to visit your mom in hospital?
Yeah, I sort of don't remember it all too much. We lived in a really clink. Uh-huh. Cheers. one of my hidden ones, isn't it? We lived on this really gorgeous house, but it was like on a hill. And I just remember the ambulance people having a right nightmare trying to get her down this hill. But she was well looked after in the end. But yeah, it was massively traumatic. I always think what it must have been like to have a sibling and how nice that would have been and how different that dynamic would be. I don't know. Do you guys have brothers and sisters?
I do.
Yeah.
I'm only child. Like
you're only child like me. Child, we're nutters.
Do you find you have only child syndrome?
No, I don't think so.
What's the only child syndrome?
Spoilt little brat.
No. Nah, see, that's what people say.
And you don't share anything, you don't want to share your toys.
Nah, you only hear that. I don't agree with that. You only hear that from people who are not only children.
Yeah, totally.
Just because we're only children, it don't mean we're spoilt brats. We are who we are.
I've said nothing.
We made up for the siblings with the friends around us.
I agree. Yeah. And our imaginations.
Yeah, and our imaginations. So.
Do you think that made you more artsy?
More?
Artsy, because you were only children. Maybe. You had to play with your
possibly,
imagination.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good point. Yeah, because we didn't have those brothers and sisters to play with. Possibly, but it was
also
just
blamed for everything.
It's the norm, isn't it? When you're an only child.
Sibling, can you?
Yeah.
No. It becomes the norm.
Yeah, I think
so. Is it like, so you don't even really is what it's like having
you don't know any
no
do you?
So it's the norm for you.
Yeah
it's just like getting a kitten or a cat and leaving it alone in a flat.
Oh my god. Yeah? Oh, I don't know if it's quite as bad as that, but sure.
I tell you, because I had a cat, a boy, and he was I had it for 2 years and I live on the fourth floor. Uh-huh. And this cat has never seen and I'll tell you, this is why I got rid of the cat. And I gave it to someone. I gave it to someone in the house who's got a house with a big garden. Because this cat's on the fourth floor and he's never seen another cat in his life.
Yeah, it's not
so he doesn't know. And I see it at the window, like, You know, he needs to be in communication with people. So it's like single, but we was in communication, luckily, with other kids.
So did you have a big garden?
Yeah, we did have a big garden. We had chickens. A chicken laid
egg. Oh,
yeah. We had this really like tame hen growing up. We used to like come in the house and sit on my pillow in my bedroom. Like what? She was called Netta. She was marvelous. She wouldn't lay an egg. She laid an egg in my hand once.
And that
was the grossest but most profound experience of my childhood. I can't remember. Not like immediately.
I'd love to have chickens, just to have the egg day from the coughing.
Yeah.
Chickens.
I don't eat meat no more, so I don't eat.
Yeah, same.
So I believe you. I believe you're still going to eat the eggs, though.
I see what you mean.
Because the chickens, they give us the eggs.
That's
why I wouldn't be vegan, because vegans don't eat eggs, do they?
Well, I just love cheese too much as well, anyway.
Yeah, me too.
Cheese and eggs is all right.
Yeah, but yeah, so.
So what did you get up to in those years then?
What, when I was a kid?
Yeah.
Oh, God. All sorts of things. What do you mean?
Were you like a normal kid? Were you a naughty kid?
Yeah, no, I was
were you good
pretty
at school?
Outgoing kid. I think I was also like talking about what we're going to end up talking about as well. I was always super confident. I was always like, hitting on boys since I was like 11. I had no problem walking up to strangers or like, I didn't think I was like super sexual as a child, but I think there were certain things that were sexual experiences that I remember thinking, okay, now I think, okay, that was definitely something.
Talk
like we went to Madame Tussauds, I think, in London when I was a kid, and you know, there's like a dungeon.
London Dungeons.
Yeah. And I think I always felt like it's really exciting and like quite a thrilling aspect to the fear and the danger of it, and the torture was really like gross. Not, I'm so squeamish, by the way. I'm not into anything gross or I'm so squeamish. I'm the first person to freak out about that. But it was more about the thrill and the fear that was interesting. And do you remember, I talked about this recently, do you remember those, I don't know if you remember these sort of snap bands that you would snap around people's wrists like this? Do you remember those?
I used to
love like snacking on people and then on myself, and that was like really
cops
exciting.
Cops often don't they, those wrists.
Do you remember
those?
Kind of
straight.
You could get them in museums. I got it at Trowbridge Museum one time, and it's a long strip and you slap it on your wrist, it spins round and traps it.
Yeah.
There was also, can you remember those finger ones you used to put, those little cage finger?
Yeah, and then they were
finger trappers. Yeah, they were cool.
Lessons. They were still cool. I've forgotten about those. Yeah. So just like, I think, you know, if I had to think back about things that like might lead to the kind of sexual woman that I am now, I'm like, okay, those little things.
So were you into like gothic stuff, vampires, anything like
that? No, not at all. I was never like an emo kid. I did used to hang around the skate park.
Are you super confident? So you're the sort of girl that's going to approach a guy.
Yeah.
You fancied a guy. You was.
I had no problem talking to them.
But would you 9 times out of 10 make the first move?
Yeah, but not in the sense that I thought that I would necessarily, anything might happen. Not like I'm like great. It
but
was more girls, like not frightened of it. Do you know what I mean?
But some young girl.
It wasn't like an arrogance. It was more just a confidence about it.
It was the confidence then. Yeah.
It just didn't really bother me. It was never like, although I do remember being around the back. I think I was naked a lot as well when I was in like primary school, just running around not getting
in school?
It. Yeah. when I was at 5, I just wouldn't care.
Had you run around naked in school?
Yeah, probably. I think a friend of mine told me that. Or in some changing room or something.
Oh, in the changing room?
Yeah. Let's clarify. Is this an all-girls school?
No.
No.
I mean, who cares?
I'm confused.
Yeah, but I just had a flashback.
Not in the maths class.
It's not in class. But like, you know, you're like 5. I mean, who cares?
You're talking about 5 years old.
And you're in some changing room and I was just running around and I didn't care.
Right.
I do remember prodding some boy's willy.
Oh my God.
That's interesting.
You remember that?
I don't think that's just kids, though. I think all kids do that kind of exploratory thing.
Let's move on to smoking.
There's a nice little story before then.
Okay.
Traveling around Europe.
Oh, yeah, sure. Just to clarify, just being kids too. Anyway. Traveling around Europe. Yeah. So I think it was maybe a bit of a last resort for my parents to try and resolve something going on in the marriage.
Oh, God.
But yeah, we just decided, they asked my school if they reckon I'd be okay. And I always was pretty bright and did well at school. So they were like, do you think she'd be all right if she didn't go to school for a year? And we're going to sell the house and go around Europe. My mum doesn't fly, by the way, so we went everywhere by like train and by boat, which is pretty wild. So we sold the house and went around traveling around Europe.
And the school was cool with that, because that would be so not cool with them sort of things now.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah, you probably couldn't do that now.
Nah.
But there's also a private school.
Yeah, yeah, so
as long as you paid it.
Money talks.
No, no, not at all. So I didn't go back to, I didn't actually go back to that school. I went to a different school after that, which I ended up being at for the rest of my schooling career, which was great and really formative.
So you go back from Europe? Did you go back to Scotland?
So yeah, I went back to Scotland. And you got hiccups. Yeah. You just necked your wine. That's why.
That's the wine.
Do you need a top up?
Kaz going. Kaz,
yeah.
I think I'm a top
up. Yeah. Cheers.
We're trying to get everyone tipsy here, you know.
I know.
Blimey,
it didn't say much.
The way podcasts go.
Yeah, great.
Well, can I go back? Sorry.
Yeah, go
what
on.
Europe
we're
was
derailing.
Like. You're 12 years old. You're traveling around Europe.
How jammy is that? Like,
yeah.
I think it was interesting because as well, you know, I think at that age as a kid, you want to be around your mates. And it was like quite a difficult thing to leave that. I had this best friend in the world who I still live with now. Like we've reconnected all these years later. We've been best friends forever since we were 9. And now we're currently living together. But, you know, you make these relationships and then that sort of, we all broke up from that and went our separate ways. But yes, it was more like wanting to, I think that's why some sort of like provocative and defiant behavior came in and like wanting to smoke as a kid or like do my own
was
thing
it the
because
French?
I didn't really have, yeah. the Italians, oh my God.
It was the Irish actually.
Well, yes, they did. Oh my God. So yeah, well, we went to live in Ireland. My dad was supposed to have this job in Ireland.
What
that,
part?
Like never transpired. County Waterford, down
okay,
south east.
Yeah.
Mm. So we lived.
My mum's from Cork.
Is she from Cork? Yeah, from Cork? Oh yeah, because yeah, you're half Irish,
half Greek Cypriot.
Wrap up, Mama War.
Yeah. Throw a sea out for Cork.
Cork's great. Cork's lovely.
Yeah,
really
it's lovely.
Loved
isn't it?
It. Yeah, we went all around Ireland. It's an amazing place.
Waterford's lovely.
Yeah, we were in the middle of nowhere. I would just be like jumping on the back of tractors like to get into town.
Yeah.
And like my Saturday was going down the local dairy farm and learning how to like plug the things into the udders to like milk them, like totally random. And then stealing cigarettes and then going to smoke them at the back in the dark, trying to pretend like I was never going to get caught.
Did you actually take it back?
Eh?
You know when you start smoking, you don't actually take it back, do you?
No, I think I was like quiet. Into it from the start. It actually started when I was about 6 because my mum's best friend's mum, who is a super glamorous woman from Morecambe in the Northwest, she would smoke, but she would only smoke like these super length, super what are they called? Super
Vogues.
Kings. But no, Vogue. Super Kings, but like she would just smoke the end of them. And not really smoke the rest of the cigarette. So she would just like gesticulate and be like, rah, 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 rah. And then like stub it out and there would be all this cigarette left. And I was like,
I've seen people do that. Yeah, what's like the point? What a waste of cigarette?
Exactly. What are you doing? Yeah. So I was really.
But she smokes this. It's good for her.
Maybe I just thought she was like super glamorous or something, and I wanted to see what that was like.
We're not advertising smoking, by the way.
Oh, shit, no.
Them days, it was like part of the look, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. I don't smoke anymore at all. Like, and I only ever really smoked socially. I was never addicted. It was always just something to do, and it was just. I think
cigarettes
it was just a rebellious thing. Yeah. I think it was just a rebellious thing rather than anything else, and it was fun to do. But the school that I was at in Ireland, fucking everybody smoked, and we were all like 12, 13, 14 years old. Yeah. It was insane.
I noticed that in Ireland. It's like that.
It's like
Ireland.
There was a smoking area.
Yeah.
So take us into the pub. Your first packet of cigarettes.
Oh yeah. Oh my God. So we were, I think it was either Killarney or Kilkenny. I think it was Kilkenny because I think that's where we were. Where were we? Anyway, my parents were doing something else, and I was like, right, I know the pubs back then had cigarette machines,
yeah,
which was like great, and I think they did have them my dad lives in Germany and they still have them there, I think, even now. And I had the money and I was like, I knew this was this thing that I wanted to do, so I like ran into this pub, I don't know how, on my own, like 12,
not looking
nobody
suspicious.
Like gives a shit. Wow. And I at the back of this pub there was this machine by the loo's. And I put in my probably whatever it was, probably about £5 then. I mean, it was insane now, isn't it? And yeah, Silka Ultra.
Oh,
so embarrassing.
Awful. Oh. I used to steal them off
like
my teacher
awful.
In school and cut the butts off.
Aren't they terrible? Just like smoking,
no, smoking air.
Yeah.
<Exactly.
laughs> But maybe I thought, oh, well, it's the least bad.
And that same day you had a run in with Mrs. Dial for Father Ted.
Yeah, amazing. So, yeah, again, my just totally not shy Father about. Do you love
it
Father
Ted? It was
brilliant.
Yeah.
I love my Father Ted. Love it. I've loved, you know, I miss really well written comedy. although there are some good things these days.
Can anyone do an impression of it?
What of who? Mrs.
Anyone
Doyle?
On there?
Mrs. Who?
I remember that guy used to be like,
oh. Mrs. Doyle from Father Ted.
Okay.
Isn't that the fast show?
No, the old man on Father Ted, James. What was his name? You know, the
yeah, Father
the
Jack.
Dying.
That was it, yeah.
Father
and
Jack.
Just hit, arse.
No?
Gers!
I like Mrs. Brand's voice.
Oh, God. Oh, no. Oh, so bad. Yeah. So Mrs. Brand's bad. Voice. How is that still going? Sorry.
I love Mrs. Brand.
Do you?
Yeah, it's my favourite.
Okay, well, okay, great. I mean, yeah. I'm glad you enjoy it. Anyway, met Mrs. Doyle in this pub. And
he was starstruck.
Well, she's called Pauline McGlynn. Brilliant. No, not even starstruck. I was just like, because I think my dad was like, oh, look, it's Pauline McGlynn, Mrs. Doyle. And I was like, I'm going to go up and speak to her. And that's what I did. And then she was with some friends or something, and I felt bad for interrupting her. And then she found this like Guinness mat and signed it for me. And then I took it back, and on it said to me, go on, go on, go on, love Pauline.
Brilliant.
Which I don't know where it is now. It's probably disintegrated somewhere in a box.
So moving on quite nicely.
Okay.
The thing you enjoyed doing as a kid.
I wrote this down whilst I was on the tube writing all these things
is
down.
Is this the peeing
you.
Thing? Because that sounds what, quite interesting,
yeah, what
doesn't do
you,
it?
What are your views on...
I just want to hear more, basically. Where did that start?
Should we clarify what we're on about?
We're 5 minutes in, aren't we? We're okay.
I was going to say we are on YouTube. I don't know what we can.
Yeah, be careful. Be careful.
So if you go to the toilet...
By the way, can I just clarify? This is white wine. Thank you.
If you go to the toilet and you, as a woman, you usually sit down.
Mm-hmm.
So...
I think maybe that was another thing of defiance and like fucking around with gender... And being like, what is gender and why is it important? And why the boys got to pee standing up? And I always was really mad about that. And that we had to, as women, be out of the way, sitting down, and you couldn't just do it anywhere. And I just thought that was rubbish.
This is anyway. The activism again. Isn't
activism.
It? Yeah.
Activism. I shouldn't about that. I think just everybody should be an activist. Anyway, I started playing around with the fact that I, for some reason, I could pee really far forward. It didn't just go down.
What?
It would go out. So I would like stand up and pee into the loo. Yeah. So I stand up over the toilet like a man would do and piss into the toilet that way instead of sitting on the loo because
How?
I was like, because it would just, would my body would allow me to do it for some
Come
reason.
Come in handy at a festival. I'm
wow.
Sure.
You mean you got good aim?
I've got great aim,
babes. It sounds like good aim, isn't it?
Yeah. So, you know, I think I'm like jealous that many could
skill
do
that. Is that a skill you developed or you
I
discovered?
Developed it and that I still possess.
How often do you still do it?
Whenever I remember, but also it's like less quick these days. I'll probably just have jeans on or something. I don't know. It's just less easy.
But it's not just
the
you like doing.
No, what did I used to do? I used to like enjoy pissing into pint glasses and see if I could aim into them. I wouldn't drink. I wasn't really interested in drinking pee, but I like pissing into things that you shouldn't pee into. I just thought, well, not just
did you
pee
ever
into.
Give them to anyone to drink?
No, I didn't really get into. Didn't really get into sort of pee play until I
pee
was
play.
In my yeah. Europhilia, it's called.
Europhilia.
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 This is why you didn't have siblings, isn't it?
Wow.
Well, I don't know. I think a lot of people are into it.
Are they?
Yeah. You'd be surprised. You'd be surprised.
I think I would be.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my God, yes. What do you think? Do you think you'd like to be peed on?
No.
Do you like you want to pee on other people?
No.
What do you think you'd like about it?
Nothing. Me personally.
Okay, that's still valid.
Yeah.
The trolls are gonna feel day with that clip.
Yeah.
Great.
Fuck yeah, I mean, the I'm trolls. Speaking for myself here, you know.
No, tell me what I'm so I love hearing about other people's kinks and what they're interested in. So this is great.
I've never heard of it before. It's alien to me. So
this is why I love talking about.
Yeah, no, definitely. That's why I'm intrigued to be here and have this conversation because I find it interesting.
Can you try find Tugger's kink for us?
Well, I don't know. It depends. I don't think it's up to me to discover.
Can you just look at everyone in the room and look
see
at
what
their
they're
face
into? Do you know what?
Come up with something.
And do you know what? You'll know this. Absolutely not, because the people that I come across and meet in this life, you wouldn't believe it.
You can't judge a book by its cover.
No, not
judges,
at all.
You never know. Cops and all
yeah,
kinds
well,
of
see, I absolutely disagree. I well, yes, but also that is, I think that's a myth. I think it should be more about the fact that it's an everyday thing. You don't have to be in a high-powered position to be a submissive person or a kinky person, whatever you think kink is. It's way more everyday than it is, but it can come across as quite an elitist thing because it can come across as quite an intellectual pastime because it involves being
expensive.
Well, it can be expensive. It doesn't have
this
to be
is where this is where.
No, I disagree. It doesn't have to be. That's more okay. of a professional sense. You can just do. You can play anywhere. You can play anywhere.
It depends what sort of play.
Yeah, but I mean, half the time it's psychological. So
it's the fear as well, though, isn't it? If you've got money and you're relaxed in your life, you then have the confidence to kind of just, this is me. Whereas people that are a little bit more repressed may.
It's not just repression about the self. It comes from education and background and religion and all sorts of things that come into play without you being able to access your sexuality. This is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I am hugely privileged to be in the position that I am.
Yeah.
And being able to be sexually liberated and empowered and being able to talk about it and nothing happens to me. Amazing. I mean, apart from the fact that I'm a woman, that it's a dangerous pastime being a woman.
What do you mean nothing happens to you? Do you mean like...
As in like, I'm not going to go to prison for my beliefs or my sexuality. Isn't
well,
that insane?
In this country, no one does.
Yeah, but
it?
Exactly. But how insane is that that exists in the world?
It's ridiculous. Yeah. I think that's absolutely insane. Really, yeah. Real
for
talk.
Your sexual preferences, for you, what you want to do sexually. I mean, obviously, what you want to do sexually should always be consensual and with consenting adults. I would just like to clarify. But yeah, we shouldn't be in a position to, as a human being, be downtrodden for our sexual preferences, whether that's gay, straight, bisexual, pansexual.
Because some countries are like that.
Massively.
Yeah.
Tom Daley, when he was, you know, won that Olympic medal, is that right? And he won it and he was sat beside a Chinese and a Russian competitor who were second and third, openly talking about his gayness on TV too, that was being broadcast to those nations where those things are illegal.
Right.
It's so empowering.
Yeah.
So yeah, anyway, that's a side note.
Going back to your story then, what was the time difference between the stillbirth and your parents' divorce? And what were the years for you like? Were your parents...
My parents are great people, by the way. Yeah. And I think these days, with more access to mental health, lack of stigma, I mean, there's still a lot of stigma surrounding it, but there's a relinquishing of stigma surrounding mental health and also to do with access to therapy and like dealing with your shit. Like, we can do that a lot more now, or it feels like my generation are more able to do that than my parents' generation and ergo my grandparents' generation. You know, we're all victims of victims in this world
in different ways,
and victims of victims in different ways. So you know, I think it's easy enough to say oh, you know, people's marriages didn't work out or people didn't work out, this, that and the other, but who's to say if it would have worked out or not? But also I know that now, like, I'm in a place where I can have conversations about how I'm feeling and not feel judged by that, because I'm in a really amazing relationship where that feels possible. Anyway, on a side note, so yeah, so my parents broke up when I was about...
What was the signs that 13? That was going to happen?
Well, my dad walked away. Okay. Number one, not the main one, but that is a big thing. I mean, they were living separate lives, but I think they wanted different things and they weren't able to communicate what they wanted to each other. Mm. Unfortunately, I don't know. Are your parents all together or not together? Or
my dad's dead. So...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Long time.
My father passed away.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Well, again, I'm so lucky to have my parents still around.
Of course,
you know?
Definitely.
And have a relationship with them as well. You know, of course. So many people grow up with parents together and don't have a relationship with them.
That's the thing, isn't it? On the flip side.
Yeah, you can have parents together that are not well-suited.
So some people grow up with no parents at all.
And people grow up with no parents at all. I feel like what's really interesting about kink and BDSM is that people come from all different walks of life, but everybody's got their own stuff that they're working through. It's very unlikely you'll find people that aren't working through some stuff.
I think there's nobody, is there?
But nobody is, but in real life, but it often does seem to transpose over to this world. Is not that, and what also annoys me is that a lot of people think that with kink is that because it's seen a lot in the movies, like, oh, this is a terrible thing and I've experienced some awful thing in my life, like, or, you know, it's a bad thing, like, it's like the other or like a darkness. And I don't think
what would people think the bad thing is about it?
Well, it's just because it's, you know, not the straight and narrow and not some sort of heteronormative patriarchal bullshit that everybody else has to deal with.
What do you mean by that?
What do I mean by that?
Yeah.
Okay, how long have we got?
Hold on. Let's go back to your story.
Okay, so, yeah, so, yeah, so yeah. Your parents.
Sorry, when you were a young person,
yeah,
could you comprehend that they were going to break up, or was it beyond your perception at that age?
What's quite interesting is when I remember when they did break up, I thought, oh my God, I can't imagine them not being together. But now I'm like, I can't imagine them being together at all. I don't know how that works. But yeah, no, I don't think so. I mean, they did row a lot. But I mean,
so you were braced for
it. I had
it.
A good childhood. I didn't have a terrible time. This is the thing. Like, I didn't have a terrible time at all. My parents did the best that they could as people and for me, and I will always be eternally grateful for that. So yeah, they always let me be whoever I wanted to be.
Great. So your parents' divorce almost threw you into theatre.
Yes, that's right. So in a way, I think I remember thinking this. By the way, have I gone bright red yet?
No.
watch this wine intake. Definitely found solace in youth theatre, and that was like a definite start for me of discovering theatre and wanting to be in the acting world or acting industry, so to speak, because A, it was out with my school, and B, it was out with my home life, and just where I could just totally be myself and discover things and who I was. And I was obviously had quite a presence, I think, and that really sort of worked well for me, and I really found a love for it, and that I was quite good at it from an early age and was encouraged to continue with it. And I think it was my dad that was like, I think you should go to this youth theatre in Perth, by the way, Perth Youth Theatre, big up PYT, in Scotland, Perth Youth Theatre. Yeah, it's actually incredible repertory theatre. Now it's called Horse Cross, but their youth theatre when I was growing up was really, really excellent. It's like Ewan McGregor started off there and all that kind of stuff, you know. So yeah, had a really, really great time and had all these friends and this sort of, yeah, total escape from that, I think, is, you're right. I think if I think about it subconsciously, that's exactly what
you were like, tug of war's kitten in the garden for the first time.
You can see over there
with other kittens, new kittens.
Yeah. My cat was called Lucky as well.
Kaz has a lot of kittens.
Yeah.
Kaz's kittens. That's what you call
them. If I knew you, I would have given them to you.
You would have done, yeah.
Shout out to Kaz's
kittens. I collect
them.
Have you
seen them?
Yeah, I've got four cats.
I found a cat on the beach this summer, last summer, under a kitten.
Yeah.
With my mum, found a cat under the... A kitten? Oh, bloody hell. I found a kitten.
You found a kitten?
Under a rock in Orkney, where my mum lives on this little island, just like mewing. We're totally derailing the story, aren't we? But yeah, I really wanted to keep her and I couldn't, and it was absolutely heartbreaking. Like, I mean, I really didn't want to give her up at all. She's got a lovely home now. Thank you, Orkney cats. Thank you, Orkney cats.
So yes, getting into the boy chats.
Oh,
when were
boys.
You first interested in them?
So it's kind of interesting about boys, because now I like everybody. I would say that I'm queer now. I thought I would say pansexual for a while, but it doesn't really fit.
What's pansexual?
What's pansexual is attracted to people of all genders.
Everything, basically.
Yeah.
But there's only two things, though.
No, there isn't.
No, it's not.
Oh, sorry.
In my opinion.
Sorry, my bad.
So, I mean, yeah, so it takes into consideration all genders, because people are trans, non-binary,
right.
Male, female, intersex, whatever you want to be, doesn't really matter. Gender doesn't really matter to me at all. It's who you are.
Pansexual
as a person.
The person, right?
Yeah, it's who you are as a person.
So you thought you was pansexual?
Well, no, I mean, I would consider I am, but I just really love the word queer, and I think queer is a really important word, and I think it's a really great word and something to be really proud of, to be like attached to. But at the same time, I often feel not queer enough, because I spent so long just interested in men, and I still, to this day, I probably wouldn't say that I would want a girlfriend, or I would want to be with male presenting person, I think. So it's such a massive topic and such a massive area that I've been really introduced to by living in London, which is so lucky. But, you know, kind of growing up, I wasn't really introduced to that. And then apart from that, going to a girls' school and like being like, oh, they're hot, or this is like Angelina Jolie is well fit or something. We're never really acting on that apart from like snogging girls at school, like everybody does. But yeah, I was never really interested in women.
So yeah, let's go back to your first experiences with a boy.
My first experience with a boy.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Losing your virginity.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Or snog even. Should we start with a snog and build up?
Snogging.
Yeah, stop with
I snogged a boy on a beach once in Arisaig. It was very romantic. That was my first kiss in Scotland on the west coast. But yeah, I think I got with a lot of guys when I was 15 or so, but I remember thinking, okay, well, I can't have sex. I'm not allowed to have sex because that would be really bad if I have sex before I was 16. I think that was probably just drilled into my head or whatever. But I think growing up where I grew up, we wouldn't have really done that. But I was definitely.
So you done things proper, then? You done things proper.
Oh, I'm so proper. Yeah. But like, I think that definitely, like I was always sort of like an agony aunt at school, like, or people would be like, oh, you've done this thing, like, can we talk about that?
So that TV show, what's it called? Do you know what I mean?
Oh,
Sex Education.
Oh, Sex Education.
You know, they go to the toilets. Were you like the maid?
Oh, Gillian Anderson. Yeah. Well fit. Yeah. Oh, yeah, her son, yeah. Oh, yeah, Otis.
Yeah, Otis.
Oh, God, she's so good in that, isn't she?
I'm just going to fall short of it. So this program's.
Oh, you've not seen it? Oh my god, it's so good.
Right, it's on Netflix. It's highly best. Recommend.
I highly recommend.
And it's this sex therapist and her son story.
Yeah.
And her son, she's a high sex therapist. And she talks openly about, you know, obviously, anatomy.
And it's Gillian Anderson.
Everything and everything.
And he's obviously mortified by this.
He's mortified by it, and all his friends at school.
But it's really cool because it's
shot. And you go around the house and there's like vaginas all around the wall.
But it's
like
shot
in Jen's house.
Yeah, and that my house of dreams is her house. It's shot in the style of like an American high school kind of 80s. Musical.
Yeah, 80s. I've seen it advertised. Yeah. I just haven't watched it.
But it's really good. Really good.
Check that out.
It's very good. Yeah. You should watch it. I'm so bad at derailing.
Because we're a true crime podcast, we have to ask, what was your first prison experience?
Oh, yeah. Right, so weirdly, I really, really don't know how this even, like, was signed off to even happen. But we were in sixth year, I think, or fifth year, which is like your second to last year of high school. You're like 17. Anyway, it's called Lower Sixth, where I went to school. And our school priest, was also the local prison. And by local prison, I mean like an HMP priest. HMP Perth. I don't know how, it's not obviously a max security prison, but there was like definitely... what's the word? People who had done some serious shit did go to this prison. About 10 of us, there was this thing on the notice board, smacked on the notice board, being like, prison visit! 17 years old and up, if you want to go. And we were all like, sign up! That sounds amazing, slash terrifying, obviously fun. But really, like, went over our heads as to like why that was mental to allow 17-year-old girls inside a men's prison. Yeah. Anyway, 10 of us were allowed to go.
It wasn't a Scourge Street program.
No, because it wasn't like that at all.
Okay.
And the way that it was conducted wasn't like be good.
You'll end up in here.
Yeah,
like me.
It totally wasn't like that.
That's what we all did when the young ones came in. They all jumped to the front of the cells.
Legs akimbo.
You want to be my cellmate?
You ever watch League of Gentlemen?
Yeah.
Legs akimbo theatre. Some kind of show like that. No. So, yeah, like, we were all told you're not, you know, no makeup. You have to wear your, like, baggiest tracksuit. That's so fucking weird. Like, as if that's going to make a difference. All these, like, gorgeous 17-year-old girls going into a male's prison.
Wow.
Anyway. Anyway, so yeah, we went, and all I kind of remember it now as flashbacks is walking around, and we were like shown like isolation cells and like the different like layers. What do I mean? Layers?
You had a tour of the prison.
We fucking had a tour of a prison, and there were, you know, people really, really eyeballing us. I mean, I wasn't
scared. Of course, as they would do. Yeah,
I found it really hot. I found it super hot. I was like, if only I was allowed into one of the cells.
Oh, God. So would they be scared of you?
Whoa.
No, they wouldn't be scared of me. I don't think I was ever like that. I was never like a man.
No, I appreciate your honesty.
Yeah,
but I was like, this is really hot. And yeah.
What about your other fellow schoolmates? What? How did they?
I was just going to say that as well.
Yeah. A little bit more timid than I.
Do you reckon? Do you reckon a couple of them felt the same, or just didn't say that?
Probably. I just say what I think. Me.
Just you were brave enough to say it. You're confident enough to say
never,
how you felt.
Never.
I'm sure there was probably one or two others. That's crazy, though.
Yeah. Right. So then, at the end of that, we went round, and some people had, you know, stuff in their room and what they were allowed, and some people it was, I don't really remember. I just remember thinking, fuck, this is like intense, for them, like, not me. I was like, this is like a privilege to be here. But then at the end, there was two prisoners, two guys, rather, and one had like a red, bib on and the other guy had a blue bib on, and we were like allowed to talk to them and like ask them questions, but we weren't allowed to ask what they were in for. And I was like, I really want to know where they're in. Which obviously makes sense, but I would have been more interesting to find out why they're in there.
That's the head. That's the main topic, isn't it?
Right? Yeah. Come on.
You got into prison. That'd be the main topic you want to talk about.
And what that means. Yeah. You know?
Can you remember any of the questions?
So I don't remember the questions, but I remember the types of people. The one guy had clearly been there a few times and was really quite blasé about everything, and it was chill. And the other guy was really like nerdy and mousy, and really like, he seemed really like, you know, what's the word when you feel not guilty, feel, what's the word,
shameful,
remorseful, thank you. Yeah. Remorseful of what he'd done, and I was like, what the fuck are you doing? But in totally in like fascinating way. Yeah. I mean, I think the prison system is a load of shit. I mean, it's worse in America, and it's quite frightening how terrifyingly bad it is, and people are sent to prison for stuff they shouldn't be sent to prison for all the time, and I think it's really frightening, and it's getting that way here.
Well, back then you said, you know, you thought it was hot, so were you tempted to get arrested?
I think me personally, I somehow never managed to do anything worth being arrested for, but then what's worth being arrested for?
You just haven't been caught.
You've been clever.
I've been clever.
We've all been caught.
Yeah, I mean, you know, unless you want to like,
that's
not crime. Is that crime? I don't know if that's crime. Someone should do it.
Jane, what star sign are you, by the way?
I'm a Gemini, obviously.
Oh. Ace at the Geminis. Fucking mental.
Gemini. What are you?
Scorpio.
Same here. Cars. Scorpio.
Oh, what,
Gemini? So,
Gemini. So, what's your birthday?
Leo.
28th.
Leo.
May. 19th of June. You're Leo.
Leo, yeah.
Oh, yeah. My two first like big relationships were both Leos.
Okay. And you met one of them at uni.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, first like proper long-term relationship. I just find this really lol that you were talking about my life. This is so bizarre. So weird. He is this gorgeous Northern Irish boy. I just wanted to have a day off school and I didn't want to go to normal uni. So we went to Glasgow Uni Open Day and I was like, yeah, sure, let's go. And there was like some school bus there. And beautiful, Glasgow Uni is this gorgeous building, and you go in and there was up the stairs, and I was just like pissing about looking at these stands of like doing, I don't know, engineering. I was like, yeah, cool. Right. No thanks. Where are the boys?
God. So I was wild and crazy.
Yeah. We were tame.
I mean, it's just something to do, isn't it?
Mild.
No, I love this because this is, like, I believe this is the mind of a lot of women, but
yes.
she speaks it out.
It's true.
Yes.
This is not surprising to me, but this is a mind of a lot of women. But you are outspoken and confident. Women.
Yes,
thank
respect
you.
To you.
That's great.
I totally agree. I think it's becoming more acceptable now. Reclaim Absolutely. The word slut. Not that I really was a slut, to be honest. It's just more of the idea of what a slut means.
Sexually open, I would say.
Precisely, but this is what I'm saying. But yes. Slut has been obviously claimed to be this thing where even having sex with a lot of people is what a slut is. Which is what I wasn't. I wasn't doing that.
Because a woman
would you seen that video of that American girl talking about being a slut? And she's like, it's amazing. Do you know the one I mean?
Oh, I think I've seen it.
And she's got this, I don't know what city it's in, but she's being interviewed by this like really religious broadcaster, I think. And he's like, what do you think God would say about you being a slut? And she's like, my grandma's a slut. Your mum's a slut. Slut is this, slut is that. I'm a virgin. No, but she's like talking about what slut means.
Sometimes I think the words we use for certain things.
Yeah, so stupid.
I think, do you think slut's an appropriate word to be used now?
No.
If it's used correctly, so. Because it depends how it's being used. It's mostly
used incorrectly, though. Isn't
this
it?
Is it. I mean. So, because of the miscontext of the word, I don't think it's a good representation.
I agree.
So is it okay for you?
Unless you're reversing it
and empowering yourself.
You're not looking at it like that, and you are trying to reverse it and empower it. But I think because of the context, I don't think it's the right word.
If you were to call me a slut, I'd find that quite offensive. But if I call you a slut,
would
you be offended? No, Kaz would be laughing.
No, because you'd be telling the truth.
That just shows the heteronormative problem. Like if a guy has sex with loads of women in a heteronormative way, exactly, it's a good thing. Whereas if a woman does, it's a bad thing.
Women are quicker to get class sluts than men, right? Yep.
A healthy sex drive in a woman is derogatory in the patriarchal sense.
Yeah, because that's terrifying.
So that's why I think the word should be done with, because we shouldn't put that word because it's used to sort of...
Well, I disagree.
It's used towards a woman.
It's got bad energy attached to it.
The word slut is used towards a woman to make her down.
That about the word gay like 40 years ago.
Yeah.
No. It's a different context.
We should remove the stigma around the word.
Exactly.
Back to the boyfriend. He had a broken back.
Yeah, when I met him, he had this back brace on. Aww. He was this gorgeous, had this like amazing head of hair and these green eyes. And I was like, bloody hell, who's that? But he had this thing on his back and I wasn't sure what was going on there. But I just walked up to him and I was like, what happened to you? And he was like, broke my back. I was like, oh my God, how? He was like running off sand dunes and jumping. And he ran off the sand dune. And instead of rolling down, he like jumped the whole way and landed on his feet and like crushed a vertebra. I was like,
oh wow.
So adventurous. Anyway, so met him, and then I think
you know
I had
what you've got to do, Tugger, to get a date?
Break your back.
Or at least wear a back brace.
Yeah. Anyway, so we
come up with a backstory.
I know.
Next time,
put me on the back bench.
I know. I've only ever broken my shoulder a tiny bit there. I've never broken them. Touch wood. Anyone else? Any bad injuries?
We're going to get to that.
Okay, right. I'd like to divert and talk about other people instead of myself.
He was your formative relationship in terms of kink.
Yes, definitely.
You had a back brace fetish.
That came off after a while, luckily. I guess we just thought that was just what everyone did, or that was a normal thing. We had this really, I guess, really kinky dynamic. Like, it was very switchy. We say switch, which means you're both dominant and submissive in sort of a fluid way. We would get up to all sorts as well, because we were like 17, 18, and he was one of four. There was a lot of children in the house and his parents were around. Like, we'd often like have to bugger off to like down by the river, and where this was like a beautiful like Perthshire village, you know, with lots of forest and stuff. So I think maybe
sounds
like
a nice
outdoor
place to get kinky,
right? And there's nobody there to find you either, so that's ideal. So yeah, just maybe a healthy appreciation for outdoor sex now.
As long as it's not cold like this.
Well, it definitely was. We did all sorts together, and I think I remember one time we tried to be really sneaky. His parents ran like a holiday cottage business, and it was his idea, it wasn't mine. And he's like, oh, the holiday cottage is free tonight, let's go. And I was like, oh great, that sounds fun. Like, we made sure we didn't leave a trace, like all the stuff was completely left, you know, untouched. But of course somebody had seen us go in and put the light on, and
busted.
Or I can't remember which way it round. It was either go in or go out again, and had like rang his parents, and then like
that's not
the
a
next
crime,
day.
Is it really?
Of course, it wasn't. It was less the doing it. It was more like the lying and the deceit and like lying
what
to
his
mum, who I
say?
Loved. Oh, she was really. She was like just mad that we'd like you know lied. I don't think it was about.
She was mad about
thing.
The sex, just the.
And, well, I don't actually know. She probably was that too, but you know, he was like reasonably good boy. To be fair,
did you return the dog bowl?
No. What?
Yeah, we did get up to all sorts. Yeah, he fed me my dinner in a dog bowl.
Who?
My boyfriend. He fed me my dinner in a dog bowl on the floor and I ate it.
One minute. your boyfriend fed you your dinner in a dog bowl.
I was being a dog.
You was being a dog.
I was the dog, and he fed me my dinner.
Did you ask to be the dog, or did it was his idea?
I can't remember. It was just something that happened.
How did he have his dinner?
He had it probably on the table, because that was the specific dynamic of the day.
You two were proper pedigree chums, didn't you?
Oh, shit. Kev, we're looking for sponsorship, pedigree chums.
Yeah. Crofts eat your heart.
There's no sponsorship going on here, by the way.
I know. Sorry.
Just
I was only
visual.
Joking. Just to be visual. I was just joking. I think poppy play is really interesting.
You also got up to something else interesting.
Do you not know about that?
Poppy play? Me and Kaz had someone on recently who dresses up as a puppy.
Yeah.
We filmed him with James, dresses up as a full. Do you know Rascal? He's on the scene.
No, but cool.
They're the furry people.
No, he wears
that's a different
PVC
thing.
Okay. Dog suit.
Yeah.
And he runs around, he's a puppy. And there's a puppy Crofts up in Birmingham.
Yeah.
So
we could do a documentary on that, can't we, James?
I think there's been a few already.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's so interesting because it becomes
a whole new world to me.
Yeah, man. But I think
it's a learn.
Anything is for anybody until you get into it. And I think it probably was the same for me to begin with, like once I sort of really... you know, sort of went down the rabbit hole, so to speak. But like now,
rabbits now.
probably. But you know, I think it's so normalized for me now that it's like what is amazing about BDSM and the scene and kink and everything is that it opens your heart and your mind to everybody is valid in their desires and wants, and everybody's you know. There's a place for everybody with that, and you should be ashamed for that thing, of course, as long as it's a consenting adult situation.
Of course.
So I think that's an amazing thing that I've discovered. Nothing is weird or gross or too much or not enough.
Nothing
like,
is weird. Nothing is too much.
Everyone is enough.
Can I ask a question? Yeah, what's the most outrageous thing
do you get this all the time?
But she likes
pretty much.
Huh?
She's done.
With your first boyfriend, the one with the dog bowl.
Well, they went outrageous.
The dog bowl was outrageous. So if I want to hear something like that,
they went shopping for sex toys.
We got sex toys together. We really discovered like an enjoyment of like messy sex, which was like sort of I don't know if you're allowed to say
what do you mean messy
I'm not into poo or I'm not into anything like that. Or blood.
Say,
I'm not into
hard sports.
Yeah, exactly. I was gonna
say hard sports.
Yeah, but I didn't not a lot of people know what that
sports,
is.
Basically.
Yeah, not extreme sports.
Not blood sports.
Blood, I'm really squeamish, I'm not into that. But like I suppose, it was like, I think it's a really liberating thing to just like not be scared of your own body. And I think a lot of women grow up, people who, women grow up being told that periods are bad and like having sex in your period is you can't do that. And like, you know, just like, again, another restriction on being a woman and your body. And I think it's really nice to like reclaim that too. And if you want to do that, then that's fun. Like, and that should, and actually, it's actually quite good on your period. So like, why shouldn't you? And that, I think that's just starting to slightly, again, chip away at that being less stigmatized and that being a bad thing.
Well, for women to have sex on their period?
Yeah. Or just like not be grossed out out by it. Oh my God.
Before the patriarchy, it was the nectar of the gods, was menstrual blood.
Yeah, of
and the honey from the bees of Aphrodite.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all.
Because they worshipped Mother Earth.
Yeah, it's just the most, it's a super, I mean, so is going to the toilet a natural thing, I suppose, but like, it's like less dangerous and not at all dangerous for your, you know, to your, how am I going to say this? This is probably going to sound rubbish.
Carry on.
You know, like, as in, it's not a dangerous thing, whereas poo is potentially quite contaminated and bad. Yeah. So what I mean is, not that I'm like super into it or something, I think I'm just such an advocate for trying to move away from the fact that, oh, you can't do that. I can't do it because I'm on my period. Fine if you don't want to, but like, I think it's
men. So that's what you meant by messy sex?
Spit, no, not sex. Necessarily. Okay. It was more like spit and just like bodily fluids and like, right, not being like a fun and interesting
highly
thing.
Feminized.
But, I mean, maybe, yeah, highly feminized. Mm. Bang on.
So yeah, your first sex toy.
Yeah, oh yeah, this was not my idea. And shit, I said his name. We can cut that, right? Yeah,
I never heard you.
Because it's timestamp, right? Is that timestamp.
He was like, oh, I've just ordered a double-ended dildo off the internet, and I was like, a what?
What a way to go.
I didn't know what that was. Yeah, at all. I had no idea what that was. So yeah, we had some good fun with that. I remember
so
that.
You know what one of them is, Tucker, right?
No.
A double-ended dildo.
I got the idea now. What would a double-ended dildo be used for, though? Like, why double-end? So you both stick it up each other?
Yeah, I think it was probably originally
for a man and woman.
I think at the time it was probably more of a lesbian sex toy.
I would have thought so.
Requiem for a Dream.
But you and your boyfriend,
you seen that movie, Requiem for a Dream?
That's what I was about to say. Sorry for wondering that widely, but how did a double-ended dildo have use for you and your boyfriend?
I think, if I can remember, it's actually, I feel like I don't have much memories about the actual use of it, but it was more like,
well, you don't have to disclose it. Maybe
no, I just feel it. I'm sure it was great.
we should probably leave the detail at that. On that story.
Oh, that's why I said I might be being too nosy.
It's good to take it to the sex toys in your
so
sex
far.
No, I'll be honest, I had an experience once. It was very traumatic.
Go on.
Is this a prison story?
Yeah, it's a personal story. My mate hooked me up with a girl once. And I went round to her house and she made me dinner. It was lovely dinner, by the way. Salmon, boiled potatoes, very posh. Anyway, on the sofa, coffee, and then she pulls out this big box of sex toys.
Yes, girl.
Woohoo.
Like every person should own a box of sex toys.
I run out of the house. I run out. Because it was, I was there, what's this guy? I didn't know this girl. And this, but I don't mind, like, it's too many things in it. It's all different. I didn't know what they
were. It's all right, darling. You don't have to be threatened.
No. Not for me. I was saying, there was a big briefcase and there was all sorts in there and I didn't even want to look in there. All I know is that wall heap of things in there and I don't want no parts of this. I got out of there.
Go out of there.
I'm a celebrity, get me out.
So much better.
I
know, don't feel threatened.
Right.
Can I say something quickly?
I felt I had to share that.
Your first proper job was at Costa Coffee in Perth.
Ah, Costa Coffee in Perth. The hub of Perth. Or it was in 2008. Anyway.
What motivated you to join Costa Coffee? Was it because it was such a product you believed in?
Yeah, I really,
so intensely?
Yeah, I really
believe in them.
I really believe in, like, yeah, corporate strategies and branding and whatever shit that I had to learn. No, just really fancied the boy that worked there.
I love the honesty.
But when I got the job there, he stopped working there.
Oh,
I
was like,
God. And when you were walking past Costa Coffee, when that heart went off over your head, was he wearing a back brace?
Wearing a back brace. Okay. He's had really nice eyes. Oh. I do love a pair of good nice eyes. It's important, you know. But yeah, so I worked there and I was trying to save some money to go traveling around Asia, Southeast Asia by that point, because my boyfriend and I had decided that's what we were going to do for like 9 months after we finished school, because I was going to go to drama school, but I think it was either that I didn't get in that year and I only tried one school. But it's basically like there are 30 places a year at drama school. And I knew that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be an actor. I'd like done some film school in New York the summer before. And I was like, this is amazing. Like, I really want to carry on doing this and all the youth theater and everything like that. And my school was really supportive and they were like, yeah, you should do this. So I think I applied for, like, I had no idea about the process of applying for drama school then. I was like, yeah, I'm going to go for it. And I applied for the one in Glasgow that's amazing. It was called the RSAMD at the time. It's now called the RCS, I think.
Drama school.
Drama school. But there's only like 30 places and thousands of people apply.
It's hard to get in there.
I was only 17. Mm. I didn't really know what I was doing and I didn't get in. So I gutted, but I also really want to travel and I always loved traveling and I had that such an experience from a young age, which was always wanting to see more of the world. So we decided that's what we were going to do. So I had to obviously get some cash to get there. Not that we really needed much money. I think by the end we traveled, it was like $9,000 we spent between us for a year. Wow. Which is insane. So it was like, yeah, not very much. But anyway, I just, yeah, I had this assistant manager who was an absolute cow. The manager was amazing. We got on really well. Like, yeah. I just did what I had to do. I mean, I always quite enjoyed autonomy in a job, which is obviously interesting with the word. Yes. Well. But I didn't mind working for people if I liked them and I respected them and they respected me. And I actually always hated working for, like, companies that were like faceless and corporate and money grabbing and all this sort of brand standards, and you had to be who you were at all times. I hated it. It felt really false, but I needed the money. But yeah, she was this assistant manager. She just like bullied me, and I'd never really experienced that before. And I was like doing a fine job. And then you know when somebody's like watching your every move, you like fuck up or something, you know, you're just like, oh. And I always seemed to be like really on edge around her, but I was totally fine around.
Okay, that was Sean.
Which way round?
Yeah, which way round?
Take less breaks. The vibe will change.
Never.
So no, you had a near-death experience scuba diving.
Yes. The story that all my friends know, because I've probably told it like 10,000 times, but it was really quite a traumatic time and not something that you expect to happen to you. So yeah, we went to Thailand to begin with. Classic, everybody goes to Thailand. I know.
I'm going
to
find myself.
But not in that way. I think we were really intent on not doing like the beaten track. We were going to off the beaten track, but we did want to do some diving. Did the open water course, which is like the opening beginners course. Anyway, it's at Koh Tao, which even in 2008 was like so overdived, totally fucked, ruined by tourism then. And I can only dread to think what it's like now. Anyway, we did this course and that was fine. Didn't really love it. I think I definitely have a thing for control and I don't like feeling out of control, surprisingly. Interestingly. Uh-huh. And being underwater, you got to
like
go with it. No, but yeah, you can breathe if you're not underwater. You're flying. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's the idea that obviously
about the experience that made you feel like kind of
yeah, if you don't have your oxygen tank, you're dead. That was part of it.
It's a big part of it.
Big part of it. I like the sort of more shallow depths with the sort of coral reefs and stuff, but I think when it got off that shelf and it was just like this big open depth of nothingness, that kind of freaked me out quite a lot. Anyway, we did this open water course, and then my boyfriend was really, he loved it. He was really good at it. He really enjoyed it. And I was like, loved that he loved it. And I was like, okay, we'll do the next one, which is the advanced course. And the first dive of the advanced course is like a 30 meter dive, which is a deep dive, which is actually quite mad. It's very deep. Yeah. And it was really beautiful. I didn't have any problems on the dive. We saw like a shoal of barracuda. It was stunning. We had an amazing time. And as we were coming back up, and obviously you have to equalize on the way back up so that you don't die, got back up to the surface. I did. So I got the bends in my brain, which in the book, when you read the diving journal, when you're learning about diving, there's a section about, you know, problems you can encounter whilst diving that are medical and need attention. The first one is a pulmonary embolism, which is where you come up too fast and your lung explodes and you die. Jesus. The second one on the list is an arterial gas embolism, and that's what I had in my brain. So basically the bends is nitrogen bubbles that haven't fizzled out of your system because you are breathing this.
That's why you equalised.
Yeah, on the way up to fizzle all them out, basically. And going down and up. Mm. And normally what happens when you get the bends is people have run out of oxygen and they have to come up quickly. That's what normally happens. Right. I had a totally normal dive. Everything was fine. So when I got back to the surface, I was like, oh, I can't really swim properly. This is weird. Maybe I'm just really knackered and this equipment's heavy. And we went back to the boat, still feeling fine and was with myself. Got back onto the boat and you have this sort of debrief session when you're on the boat about the dive.
Yeah.
And by this point, I was like, like this. Like I was...
Oh wow!
So I was really pissed, and
she says drinking her wine.
And but you know, it's so funny. It's like so many like pro divers like drink and get smashed all the time, and they're totally fine. It's so annoying. Anyway, I was just like this, like I couldn't really focus, and I was and my boyfriend, like the friends we'd made, were like, "You all right? Like, what's going on?" Then I started talking absolute nonsense. I was talking about the stripes on my friend's socks, and like,
God bless you.
Trying to say what color they were and couldn't say what color they were. It's like I was starting to lose the ability to speak.
Oh, fuck.
Then the diving people were like, okay, something's not right here. We'll go and check you out. So they took me back to land and like took me to the doctor. Yeah. My boyfriend went out on the next dive.
By he was like,
oh, she'll be fine. She'll be probably just a bit knackered or something. Yeah. I don't know. Well, none of us thought it was bad. And I think I probably was like, yeah, I'll see you later. So he went on this dive. They took me back to the diving doctors on this island. And I have to have like a sharp, dull test. And they did all these things. I was still quite compos mentis at this point, and I was starting to really panic that because I was in Thailand and maybe I'll need the doctors, it was going to get really expensive really quickly because these things, it can go that way. And by this point, they were like, I couldn't tell the difference between sharp and dull. And I couldn't, they have to do a memory test. I couldn't remember the four things that they showed me at all.
Wow.
So it's basically like I was having a stroke.
Oh, shit.
And I was like 18. And they were like, this shouldn't happen to you. And I was like 6 weeks into a 9-month trip. Can you imagine? Mm. Just at the start. Anyway, so I was on this, on this bed, still in my wetsuit. And this bikini on underneath, and I was like trying to take it this wetsuit off and trying to like stand up and be like, I'm fine, everything's fine, like in the movie. And then I went smack down and I like fell off the bed and couldn't walk. And they were like, you're not going anywhere. Oh. And I was like, oh fuck, something's seriously wrong. Then I had to like sign this piece of paper, which all I saw was a lot of O's at the end, being like, you know, you're gonna have to get emergency evacuated by speedboat, financial forms, and signing it off, because I had to sign it and I was still in a fit state to sign it. And I was like, well, I guess they were like, you really need to go to the hyperbaric chamber, we think you've got this thing, I can't remember what they called it then, you know. And then I started to sort of lose the plot a bit, and then obviously they called my boyfriend back and he gathered up my stuff and we had to get on the speedboat, and I had to be like emergency evacuated by speedboat, which is mental. And all I kind of remember of that is like lying on the speedboat and it really smacking against the waves, and I was hooked up with an IV drip against the side of the boat that was like pulling out of my fucking face. So no wonder I'm squeamish still.
Yeah.
Anyway, whoa. So and that and this beautiful sky, and I just remember seeing this like beautiful heavenly sky and being like, oh my god, what if I'm dying? And then which I was actually, it turns out. Anyway, what seemed like forever, because it was quite far, luckily for some reason, the next island over, which is Koh Samui, happens to have a hyperbaric chamber, of which there are not really that many in the world. And so they got me there in time, because there was a certain time lapse that had to, you know, like a golden hour type thing, but a bit more than that. I had to get seen really quickly, because as it transpired, this nitrogen bubble, which in the bends normally is trying to avoid making its way to your brain, just went whoop, straight into my nervous system in my brain.
Shit.
And if it had got any worse, it would have been like a hemorrhage, I think, or something like that. I don't really know. So anyway, got to the hospital and immediately sent to this chamber. And it is like something out of NASA. It's this massive clonk, 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 cylindrical, chunk, chunk, open-y chamber thing, which you walk into and it depressurizes. So it repressurizes you back to depth. And then it takes 5 hours at a time to go back up to normal, sea level sort of thing, but on land. It's mad. I just find it amazing what we can do as human beings.
So you're in there for hours.
So I'm in there for hours.
In what
but
position?
You're not lying down. On top of that, you know, like Air Force pilots, they wear those oxygen masks.
Yeah.
They're like massive. It's like 100% oxygen that you're taking in, which is really bizarre.
Like, high.
So it wasn't really like a high, but you had to forcefully breathe in and forcefully breathe out. You couldn't just breathe normally. You had to go like, so it's like effort and really exhausting. And because it's 100% oxygen, you can't have anything moisturizer, you can't have anything on that's flammable, basically, because oxygen is completely flammable. I've got really dry skin, so my skin was just like having a nightmare. Couldn't read, couldn't entertain yourself. However, they'd thought of a really great idea. It's one of three, I think, hyperbaric chambers in the world to have a projector through the window onto the wall, and you could watch movies.
Oh.
And I remember watching About Schmidt.
What's that?
Just some weird thingy. Nicholson, what's he called? Nicholson. Jack Nicholson movie.
Yes, yeah.
Weird. Don't remember.
Quite bad
and Ice Age 2. That's yeah. what I remember watching.
Did that take your mind off?
I guess so. What was happening? I guess the near death. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, then, well, you're a bit like.
I was pretty out of it, to be honest.
You were out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So but, you wasn't panicked.
But that happened for 3 days. I had to go back.
3 days?
Wow.
For 3 days because the next day I wasn't right. And the next day I wasn't right.
When you say you wasn't right, how did you know you wasn't right?
Well, they could tell, and I can't really remember a lot of the sort of days in the chamber, to be honest. Although what I do remember is the little diving doctor called Kylie, and she was an Australian diving doctor, and she was this little tiny lady. She was called Kylie, and she was wonderful. I remember.
Not related to Minogue.
Imagine, maybe I just made that up. Maybe Kylie Minogue was with me. Yeah, exactly.
So, ask,
that was pretty mad.
Have you ever dived again?
I'm not allowed to.
What?
I'm not allowed to. I'll die. Really? Basically. So what happened is that Jesus. Apparently I have something in my heart that 20% of people have, which is called a PFO, which is like a tiny tear in one of the heart valves that on land you don't know you have. You're fit and healthy. Like I used to do loads of sport, like hockey and everything. I used to play sport, fine. But it only can go wrong if you go to depth or altitude. And even then, it's a complete one in a million. So I'm in like a diving journal somewhere now because it's a complete anomaly. It shouldn't have happened.
So mountain climbing itself. Or well, I should.
Yeah, no Everest for me.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I'm not allowed to do that.
You are
so
unique.
Yeah, I had a 30% chance of survival.
Well done you.
So, yes.
Well done.
Yes.
Yeah. So decided to do this with my life instead. Should have had like a Gandhi style, like I'm going to save the world. No, just going to beat people up.
Gone are your days of hitchhiking up through Croatia?
Oh, I love doing that. So God, yeah, somehow like we carried on that trip. Like I was fine after that after a while, but I had short-term memory loss and speech loss for a while. Weird. Anyway, I'm fine now. I still think my short-term memory is pretty bad. and then, yeah, decided we want to do some more traveling and needed a bit more cash for that. So I like worked in my local fish and chip shop for 3 weeks. I refused somebody. I don't know if you've ever had deep fried pizza.
No. In Scotland, it's popular, isn't
they
it?
They fry everything in Scotland, don't they?
They fry Mars bars in Scotland.
Yeah, it's called a pizza crunch.
Bloody Wiltshire.
Yeah, it's nothing new. But deep fried pizza, battered deep fried pizza.
You can have to try it.
Anyway, heart I decided that the man that 4 times in 1 week ordered a whole deep fried battered pizza, I like didn't serve him.
How did you refuse him?
I was like, you've had 3 this week, whatever his name was. You don't need another one.
Yeah, you was right. You was right. You should have stopped him at the second one.
He was like, I'll just have a fish supper then.
I don't know how they do it. That's crazy.
Did he have the pallor of death?
He didn't. Oh, I know. No,
he would have if he had the fourth one.
I was trying to do him a favour, but I was probably just being rude. Anyway, saved up some money, went to Croatia. So this is like 2009. I don't know why, but Ryanair had these like insanely cheap flights. I don't know if you remember.
They
still have. Yeah, but £1.
They rip you off on the packaging,
yeah,
the £1 flights.
Yeah, but we were like, we just need the smallest bag in the world. Anytime I ever went travelling, even that Asia trip, I had like the tiniest bag in the world. we started off with big backpacks, but we packed them off home and just swapped them for like handbags. It was great. Anyway,
your boyfriend had a handbag too.
Yeah, we just had little tiny backpacks. Well, do you know what I mean? Like over the shoulder bags. Not a
handbag.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, we got this flight from Edinburgh to Zadar in Croatia for £1. Which is obviously is insane.
Cheaper than a bus.
The environment. But anyway, we were like, that's great. So we flew over there and then we had £200 for a 6-week trip each. And we were like, we'll make it last. That's what we're going to do. So we hitchhiked up Croatia and we were at this one point trying to get to an island called Pag, which in the summer is, I didn't realize how many islands were in Croatia. Like, it's just thousands of islands. Have you ever been?
No.
Beautiful. Yeah. But it's endless islands, like thousands of islands.
Wow.
Maybe hundreds. Anyway, there's this island called Pag, which normally has like sort of some big festival in the summer, but it was like November or something. It was completely off season. And it was really hard to get to by hitchhiking. I actually really enjoyed it. I probably would never obviously do it on my own, but with him, it was really, really fun and not something I would have ever have done. And we were hitchhiking to get to this island called Pag. Nothing was coming along. And then this ambulance like pulls in front of us and we're like, oh, so sorry. You must need to get into this house. And he was like, you come. We were like,
wicked.
What? Wow. Okay. And he was like, you go to Pag? I live Pag. I was like, great. And it was this massive, I'm not joking, massive gargoyle of a man who had like a peace tattoo here. Shaved head. He was called Ivo or Ivo. Ivo Pivo, we called him. And he loved us and he blue lighted us.
What's blue light?
But you know when the ambulance puts on the blue light on to go on.
Wow.
Like as if it's an emergency. Yeah. And he was like, wait, you watch this. And a 2-hour journey took us 45 minutes. He was like, floored it. Decent.
That's a result.
So we were like, great. He could barely speak any English. It didn't matter.
We didn't know any Croatian.
Exactly. We were like, can't believe this is happening. It was great. We got there and he's like, where are you staying? Mm. And we were like, well, we're just going to camp because we had camping stuff. This part of Croatia and a lot of Croatia in general is basically like the moon. It's like rock. There is no comfy camping ground at all, really. And he's like, where are you staying? We're like, well, camp. He's like, no. You stay with me. So we were like, okay. But then he like led us to this empty house. And the house is completely, it's like a 3-story, it's called apartmani. I think in Croatia, a lot of people have like second homes that they rent out to tourists. But we didn't know this. And we got there and we were like, is this where we die?
This is where they kill you.
Hostel. We've seen the movies.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There was like nobody in, no lights on. The fridge was open and like dead. Nobody had been in this house for like months. But because of the lack of
the ambulance
translation, we were like, oh, it's his house.
Did you take the ambulance home?
But we got there and thought, we're going to die. This is the end. But it turned out that it was his sister's like apartment that she didn't live in, that she rented out to tourists, that he was just like giving us to stay in for 3 days.
Oh, lovely guy.
Amazing.
He was a really wonderful guy. We didn't see him again. He was like, I have to work the rest of the time. He introduced us to some of his friends at the local pub and they spoke really good English. They were like, crack on, you just go leave when you're leaving. And we were like, how can we say thank you? Because we won't see him again. We didn't have a phone, we didn't have his number. And we were like, well, what can we do? He didn't drink. We knew that because his friend said that. And what else did he not? He didn't eat chocolate or something. But all he was eating on the journey was like this massive bag of cashews. So we bought him like 3.
Sounds like sure.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Here we are.
We bought him 3 kilos of cashews.
Lucky man.
And left him on
You're
the...
jealous.
My nipples just got hard.
Cashews. That's a new one. Kinks include cashews. So yeah, we left him there. And who knows what he's doing now, but he was a very kind man and he will stay dear to my heart forever.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because obviously hitchhiking could probably go either way.
So you broke up with your boyfriend, went over to Rome, and you did something there that I'm really jealous of.
Oh, what's that?
In the Colosseum.
Oh yeah. Sneaked into the Colosseum and boned. I don't know how we got away with that.
I was there just before all this crazy madness with COVID, and yeah, it was run by me.
So. That is an accomplishment.
It was. We were like, we've got.
How on earth did you get away with that? There's guards everywhere. Mm-hmm.
Cameras everywhere.
Security everywhere. It was the middle of the night and it was slick. 2010, so less so, but it was still pretty heaving. But there was this one bit, it was honestly, it was about 3 a.m. I think it was some like American scriptwriter. I can't really remember. Some guy. Anyway, it was fun. And we were like, okay, let's do this thing. And it's quite a short story because I was quite drunk and I don't really remember. But there was a lot of bars. To stop people from getting in, but there's definitely some, and we found it completely by accident because we were trying to get in and it was getting to the point where we were like, there's no way we can really get in. Yeah, we were like, oh well, we won't do it. But somebody, and many people I think clearly in the past, had got the same idea because there was this one slither of a bit that came out enough.
We're getting in there.
And we were like, we're getting in. And we were kind of lives of a thing at the time, and it was good. And we didn't go far in because we were like, what if, you know, there are lasers. Wee, wee, boom, boom. Yeah. Oh, oh. Oh,
that would go viral.
So what happened?
You had sex and that was great.
Speechless.
Thank you very much.
No. Set the scene. So
set the scene.
Sexy.
I'm pretty sure it was not that exciting.
You've kind of broken into this place, kind of, right?
Oh, God. It's really quite a lot of flashing back memories because we were definitely quite pissed. No, it was that was it. Oh, I think there's nothing more exciting than that. Just sort of, you know, your regular one-night stand in the middle of Rome in the middle of the Colosseum sex, really.
Why not?
As I said, I'm very envious.
Wedding Rome! Oh, my God.
Wedding Rome!
Your next stop was Miami.
Yeah, Miami. So I was in Rome for about 6 months. And that was great. I love it out there. And what happened? Yeah, so I think, yeah, that's right. So a friend of mine that I'd met when I was at film school in New York got in touch with me and was like, I'd really like you to work as like a runner on this film that I'm going to do out in Miami. I was like, okay, sure. That sounds good. By which point I still was like, I'm not ready to go to drama school or uni or something like that. I think that was right. So I was like, I'll join. And then he was like, oh, actually, I think one of the parts would be really good for you. Do you want to like audition for that? And then he gave me one of the parts for the film. And I was like, sweet. Nice. So went out to Miami. And then I was going to be in Miami. The plan was I was going to be in Miami for 2 weeks and then make my way up to Lake County, which is in like Northwest Florida, like Orlando.
I love that accent.
It was really
Orlando. Do a bit more of that.
No, I'd be terrible as having a Floridian accent. I'd be terrible.
Love it.
It's not quite deep south, but it was an amazing part of the country, part of America that I would never have normally gone to. Okay, a lot of people go to Orlando for Universal and stuff, but this was like, it's like coming to London as an American and then like going to Swindon. I suppose. But Swindon with lakes. Virginia Water.
The magic roundabout there?
Yeah, you've got swamps. Right. Swampy Swindon.
It is Swampy Swindon.
Yeah.
Sorry to all the Swindon fans.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a wonderful place. Anyway, as I got out to Miami, I don't know if you ever remember couch surfing as like a concept.
Sofa surfing.
Yeah. No, the website, not couch as a surfing. Concept. I mean, as a website.
One of my friends said
you
about
guys ever
it.
Heard
so,
of couch surfing?
Yes. No, it's a website you use to stay on random people's couches. Yes. So you go on it.
It used to be super wholesome and great.
How do you not know?
Because they're rated.
Well,
rated, so you say.
So yeah, you're rated and you have references by other users and other members. And it was like honestly quite wholesome and legit, but obviously, a couple of times things went wrong for people and it got a bad reputation.
Been crazy.
No, God, I had the best time. And I obviously wasn't stupid and didn't meet up with people.
Serial killers spoil everything.
Yeah, they do spoil a lot of things. Yeah, I can imagine.
Dickheads.
But also, what I loved about you, fucking dickheads. Oi! What I really liked about it.
Stop serial killing.
Yeah, kids. Yeah.
Don't do it. Just say no.
Just say no. Don't kill. What I really loved. Thank you so much. What I really love. Fucking love you.
Thank you're great.
I love it. Love it.
No. Hang on.
Oh God, I just had this horrible feeling. I was taking the piss out of what you were doing then. In case
no, you're meant to.
Never apologize.
You're meant to.
In case that was something you thought you could have.
Don't apologize.
I know, but it's not.
I'll get offended if you apologize.
Is it a Tourette's thing?
No, it's not.
It's not a Tourette's thing.
Some people have, I know, people have asked that.
Can you imagine?
No, people have asked that.
Imagine if I was doing that.
My neighbour still thinks it is.
Okay, good. I'm just checking.
No, you can check.
Sorry.
I need to check myself.
Okay. Before we wreck ourselves.
So these guys, these guys fall in love with you.
Okay, yeah, I had this
the director name. And his brother.
I had this name.
Twins.
They all the guys falling in love with you, no?
It was very strange, and I was only 21, and I really didn't know how to deal with a situation like that. Yeah, so the film went bust before it started filming, which was obviously ideal. They said, oh, you can go home. And I was like, bitch, I've got a 90-day visa in Florida. I'm not going anywhere.
Get the most out of this.
I'm staying here. So I stayed out there, and they were like, yeah, sure, you can stay with us. And that was, you know, 3 months is a long time. And when you're kind of reasonably cooped up with people in the middle of Lake County, Florida. And really, really got on with the director. He was a really nice guy and really fun. And we had a really fun time together. But it got really intense, and he was a really intense person really quickly. He was a bit older than me. And I think maybe I was, I suppose, reasonably exotic. And that was really exciting to him.
Reasonably
exotic.
I like the
American.
Way you put in the reasonably.
It's a Scottish romance,
you
know, isn't it?
To being, you're exotic.
So what do you mean intense?
From the UK.
You mean
he was just quite intense as a person.
Towards you?
Towards me and in general. I mean, nothing untoward happened or anything. But he developed these feelings for me, which I thought were a bit, like, unnecessary.
And then my brother.
And then the brother, who was like the worked in the town and is a local person, and he was also really great. He treated me really well and was really fun and interesting in a completely different way. They were complete opposites, didn't look alike at all, you know.
Which one was hotter?
They're both really good looking, actually. I think probably I would have preferred the director, if I think.
The less intense one.
They were both as intense as each other, to be quite honest with you, but in different ways. But yeah, and I found myself in this situation where these were like having more and more intense feelings towards me, but like sort of maybe didn't know or didn't communicate to each other that they were both feeling this way. And I felt really in the middle.
Maybe they were both getting jealous of you as well.
I don't really know, but it sounds so stupid because, you know, that's a really ridiculous thing.
But these things happen. These things happen. I've seen
and
it happen.
And you're like, but then I couldn't really, I mean, I didn't really have the money to get a random flight back, and I had to sort of endure this time. And I think as well, maybe as a sort of young woman, you sort of put up with things so as not to like rock the boat or upset the balance quite a lot,
right?
So I think I did that for a while,
right?
And then anyway, it was time for me to leave eventually, and it was a really interesting experience. But then I got home and I had these like love letters, but basically what I'm saying is by the time that I knew that's how they felt was when I come back.
Oh, thank God.
In that way. So yeah, they'd sent me like these like really massive like long messages being like separately, and I don't know if they knew about how they felt about me.
They were like,
and I was like, oh God.
It's a bit late now though, isn't it? You were all the way in England.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Bye.
Bye.
Anyway.
Did you reply?
He ever gets the first letter back.
Not like to that. I have to say,
Ghosted.
That 10 years on or something, the director guy got back in touch with me on Facebook or something. And then I sent him a message. I said, look, I really appreciate that you put your feelings towards me on paper like all those years ago, and I really handled it badly.
And your brother too.
I didn't say that. And that I'm really sorry for not handling it in a better way.
Why should you have to apologise for not handling what? What do you feel like you would apologise for?
I know, because I just, what happens, isn't it? You get intrinsically
Don't be sorry.
About
is what it
other
is.
Other people. It's what I'm like anyway. I worry about it.
Carry on ghosting.
How did you meet your next boyfriend?
I met him because I was really into his cousin, actually. But his cousin was a bit too wild for me. But yeah, we just met at a pub in my local village.
How old was this dude?
How old was this dude?
No, wild. You say he's too wealthy.
Oh, I know. Thinking... I know. But also uncommunicative. Oh, there have been so many uncommunicative men in my past. God, so annoying. And I
Uncommunicative.
Just like, you know, you just put out a lot of effort.
That's the worst person to be.
You know, when you put out a lot of effort and you don't get enough
back. Okay. Yeah.
I think that that's massively psychoanalytical because I think you look for that person
got to be
that
give
you
and
wanted
take, isn't it?
In your life that didn't give you, that wasn't there for you, I think.
So is this the long-term vanilla boyfriend?
So I had a long-term vanilla boyfriend and he was great and we were really good friends and we had a really good relationship actually, and we actually got together when we both decided the next day after a really big night at the pub, and I was still wearing the clothes that I wore from the pub the night before, to go up a mountain on the 23rd of December in Scotland.
So did you say mountain?
Yep. We climbed a mountain. Me,
oh, a mountain!
A mountain.
I thought you said two mountains.
Oh, right. Oh, no, I didn't mount him. No. Well, actually, I did in a bothy at the top of the mountain. But yeah, we got together because me, him, his cousin, and my then the boyfriend to be's best friend, the four of us decided to drunkenly, still hungoverly climb a massive mountain in the middle of winter in Scotland in the clothes we were wearing from the pub the night before. Yeah. Got to a bothy, got to the top, ended up having sex with him at the top of the
as
mountain.
You do when you get to the mountain.
And I was like, I guess this is what's
well,
happening.
Well, you're reaching the climax, aren't you?
You
well,
climax.
That's true. Of the mountain,
but we nearly fucking
obviously.
Needed the mountain rescue service, honestly, on the way up there. It was terrible.
After
we
the
should
six.
Never have done that. It was. I honestly don't know how we did that. I mean, we could go. I mean, I this is you going, don't cut a long story short,
yes.
Because that is a long story. Go honestly, on, it's. It, I feel it, like it, all it. We're talking about is long stories.
That's what we want.
Are you sure?
Oh, yes, for sure.
No, it's just the fact that we decided that was a good idea and I still was wearing a dress and tights and like leg warmers and really bad shoes. And I was like, yeah, sure, that sounds like a really good idea. Jamie had a guitar on his back. I had a log in my backpack.
A log? Just the one?
Yeah, just the one log. I mean, it's so stupid. Somebody had a bottle of whiskey and somebody else had
that
something
makes more
else.
Sense.
Oh, it was
love.
So stupid. And then, yeah, we decided to climb this hill, and then that my not that at the time boyfriend's friend had this GPS, and the GPS really saved us, and we found this bothy, which is like this sort of mountain hut that you can stay in if you're up this hill, or a Munro, as we call it in Scotland. And we finally found this. We were really getting to the point where we were falling through ice and like scarring our legs through this ice. And I was
what?
Like, I'm going to die. This is terrifying.
Oh my God.
And finally found this hut, and the hut was locked, and we like kicked down the door and used the wood that we'd kicked down the door with to make a fire.
Wow.
Like it was so ridiculous. And then, yeah, it got absolutely slammed on three bottles of whiskey between us, ate some blue cheese, and I had
ending.
Sex with this guy.
And got a funny
my
story in cheese.
Joe. Oh, yeah. Oh, wait, we mean
with
what?
Blue
yesterday.
Cheese.
No,
with yesterday.
Yeah, with yesterday. Yeah.
You
yeah, I love this. Like, sometimes clients will bring you like bottles of wine or champagne or flowers or chocolates to try to be really like swanky, and because it's like considered to be like a, you know, elite, pretentious like job.
Yeah.
This guy works in a farm shop and brought me some really fucking good cheese. And I was like, yes!
Brilliant.
Yes, you can come back. He's very well behaved. So
he's
yeah.
listened to what you like and taken it on board.
Well,
next time you come back, you can bring the crackers.
We had this vetting consultation because I vet everybody. I don't know what you do, but I vet everybody that has a good submission or a consultation. Application
yeah.
by a video call, just like a quick one to see like if they're if we get on basically,
it's
and if it's the right match exactly. And yeah, he was really sweet, and we were talking about what he does, and I used to have a job on a cheese counter when I was growing up, which was a brilliant job. It's like the biggest cheese counter in Scotland I used to work on. And
so you really appreciated the cheese.
I really like cheese. So I couldn't be vegan, but yeah, and he sort of noted that and brought me some like really unusual ones.
So
very sweet. So I really appreciated that.
What happened with this long-term vanilla boyfriend then?
Well, we always got on really well, but he wanted, I think, a totally like much more normal life than I could really give him or he could give me. And most of our life when we were together, I was at drama school and we never really saw each other by the end. And so I'm really nervous about that. And And I was totally devastated because I think I really wanted it to work, but I think I was wanting totally normal things because I was telling myself that's what I wanted, if that makes sense. Yeah. Because it was stability, a lot of things that I wasn't used to. I was
Society pushes on you maybe a little bit.
100%. And you know, we got on really well and we had a really good life together. As much as he wasn't into kink, like I thought, oh well, maybe that's just something I have to get rid of, and that's, which is so funny to think of now, but that's something that, oh, that's what just happened then and that this is now. You know, and you know, each their own. And just because, you know, it's like anything, the kind of like non-monogamy or kink isn't for everybody, and I would never push that on anybody. You know, just do whatever you want between consenting adults.
But the kink isn't for everyone. No, it isn't. Always gonna be it totally isn't. Vanilla
yeah, but
out
we
there.
Had a lovely relationship. Yeah. But he wanted me to be more like 9 to 5, I think, and it just didn't work. We weren't going to get the same thing, and we weren't going to be on the same.
So this brings us on to the next thing.
Bless him.
Interesting.
I hope he's happy, whatever he is.
So your life took a bit of a turn with liaisons with pro footballers, in brackets, dickheads.
Yeah, dickheads, yeah. The two that I had an interesting liaison with was during a time where I was going through that kind of breakup and I hadn't been A, single for a long time, and B, in a place where people that like had loads of money and were like well known were showing any interest in me. So I just thought that was an exciting thing. But my God, they're A, children, and B, just totally got no, I mean, give a 23-year-old millions of pounds, what the fuck is going to go on?
We see more crazy.
You know,
things. Yeah.
A 23-year-old man, boy, millions and millions of
pounds. So how did you meet them?
I worked in this sort of swanky, with a silent S, restaurant in...
Wanky.
In the centre of Manchester. And like, it was a decent job because it was really flexible. Because drama school is like 12 hours a day, 5 days a week. It's not like normal uni. You can't really get extra work. Again, which is why it's problematic in elitist, is because you can't really... I mean, there were people from all sorts of walks of life at drama school, but being an actor, being a drama student does not, if you're from a working class background, is not really a viable thing, I have to say.
Why did you say that?
Because it costs a load of fucking money. And when you leave, if you don't work your ass off all the time, you can afford, and mum and dad have given you a load of money, you can sit on your ass waiting for the phone to ring or do whatever you want. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's so many people I know that have done well because they haven't had to worry about money because they haven't had to go off and do a normal job.
Wow.
Which is me included, by the way. I've never had, you know, never been able to sit on my laurels like that at all. Mm. But, you know, it is quite an elitist world, or it's who you know. It's very nepotistic.
Of course.
Nepotistic? It's a lot of not a nepotism involved, which is a shame. Or it's who you know. But so I needed this job in second year, I think, or maybe third year. I can't remember now. Maybe it was third year, where I had a bit more time because, you know, we were in a basement for 12 hours a day doing Chekhov or whatever the fuck we were doing. discovering what feeling meant.
Oh, good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck with that. Yeah. And it was just like a hostessing job, I think, in this restaurant, which was an amazing experience. And actually, I started writing about it because I think it would be a really cool series, because when you go to these sort of like not like a Michelin-y star restaurant, there are so many people working there behind the scenes that make the place run so well and so smoothly and work so hard for so long, who are really fucking good at their job.
Cool.
Like the hospitality industry, I've worked in it for 10 years, or I did used to work in it for 10 years, and they're the most hardworking, multifaceted people that I know, and are trying usually to do something else. And even if they aren't, are incredibly good at their job and care about it so much. You have to have interpersonal skills, emotional intelligence, know what's going on everywhere, and have 10 plates spinning all at once, and be super good at not losing your shit around dickheads.
Definitely. Tell us.
So, yes, you've had a little
anyway, job. Well, yes, sorry about this.
Tell us how you met your partner in Thailand.
I didn't meet my partner in Thailand.
Oh,
no, you did an awful advert.
An awful advert.
You did do an awful
advert.
So
you've had all these jobs, including chefing, baristing, involving tugger jobs. You then get this wonderful advert.
Just to go back there, by the way, girls don't bother with the footballers. Unless they're communicative non-dickheads, that just goes for anybody.
Anyone, particularly, that's not just football.
Just footballers. Mm. Just don't,
I've
don't go there.
Go for a wee.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you want to go on without me?
No,
or?
No.
Yeah,
no.
We'll keep going.
Yep. Are you sure?
Yeah, because we're running out of studio
so
time.
So yes, you had all these.
Tell us.
Got for your jobs, but then we have here did an awful advert.
I did do an awful advert. I did do an awful advert for a carpet company,
oh,
which was horrendous. And those kind of adverts that you see and you go, how did that ever get made? It's really bad.
On TV?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
What so was bad. It?
I know, I don't want to say. That bad? Oh, yeah, it was terrible and I never want to see it again. You know, if you're like ever on Graham Norton in like 40 years' time and they go, oh, appears. They'll show you that. And you're like, oh, my God. That's
they show you the baddest, there. Worst adverts of all time.
It was, yeah, I'd be in it. Yeah.
That's good, though. It's still
but hey, it's money. What commercials make you money.
You got paid, didn't you?
Yeah, I got paid well. And then I decided with that I would go, this is like, I was like, I'm single. I'm going to go back to Thailand without a boyfriend this time on my own for like 7 weeks. Just have my own time. Anyway, just after I'd sort of put money down on that flight or whatever, I met my boyfriend, my partner now, and we like met eyes across the room. It was at a kink social, actually. And
yeah, lovely.
And I was
gas.
Like, yeah, gas. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, in real life though. I mean, not on an app, not in a stupid way, just like literally like,
that's
oh, hello.
Nice.
Yeah, it was really nice. Isn't and he is great. It was a really nice way to meet somebody. And then yeah, cut my trip like 2 weeks short because I was like, this sunset on my own is really nice again. But it'd be much better if you were there. Anyway, so yeah, I came back from that trip for sure.
So right, we're about to get on to the kink.
Edinburgh Fringe.
Yeah, so I was like trying to think back. Like people say, like, oh, when did this all start again for you or whatever? And I was trying to think back on when that was. And for me, I can remember doing a play at the Edinburgh Fringe in like 2017 and being on this dating app and meeting up with some guy who turned out to be so nice and we got on really well. He was a comedy promoter, hilarious, really interesting, fun. And we got on really well and like, you know, went to go and hang out back at his. And like suddenly the sex was really kinky and both of us were like, oh, okay. Like, oh, okay. Cool. And then met up, I think, a couple more times. And then he told me about this website called FetLife, which I hadn't heard of. And I was like, what's that? And he was like, oh, it's basically like Facebook, but for like kinky people, I guess. So you have like a profile and, but it's about your, you know, sexual interests or your fetish. Oh, sorry. Or it's about your, you know, your kink or your, that side of you, which you, people don't see. And you can post pictures or you can ask about events or go to events or people post about events. Anyway. So I was like, I never heard of that. And he was like, yeah, I kind of really want to go to some sort of event. You know, I've really wanted to for ages, but, you know, I'm quite nervous about it because it's quite this whole big thing. And I was like, yeah, God, yeah, that sounds amazing. But I didn't even know about it then. Maybe was it 2016? I sound like a granddad. It was either 1962. We had the Cortina.
Cortina. I forgot that.
I feel like I sound like
wicked.
Oh. Anyway, so yeah, we parted ways and then I was like, oh, okay. So I set up this profile and I had this this thing and then I was like, oh God. Oh, because Craigslist. Do you remember Craigslist?
Yeah.
Craigslist had all the personals. And I used to love scrolling through them being like, this is fucking fascinating. Who are these people that want to meet people and suck their toes? I want to do that.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. No, go on.
One
Your
of my
turn.
Ex-boyfriends annoyed me so much, I put him on there. Phone number.
Where is Craigslist, though?
Oh, you can advertise all sorts, put it that way.
I think serial killers spoil that one, didn't they? Well, Craigslist.
Yeah, well, that's exactly the thing.
So, talking about damn serial killers.
Well, this is the thing. So with that kind of background in mind and that kind of, you know, thing, I thought this website would be like the same. I thought, oh God, if I talk to anyone or meet anyone on this, I'm like, well, I'm going to die immediately. Yeah. And I think, I don't know, it's not like I was like, fuck it. I just like got a sense of somebody. I think I've always been reasonably good at using my intuition and my emotional intelligence to tell if somebody may or may not kill me.
Yeah.
And I'm still here. So hopefully that's just, you know, done myself proud. But so I was on this website and then somebody was talking to me and I thought, okay, yeah, they seem interesting and all right. Like I'll meet them, and it was in a public place, and it was at this
Is that what you call a munch? Because yeah, I wanted to clarify for everyone out there what a munch is. I had to
personally hate the word munch. It comes from meet up and chat, and it's like a kink social, but I really think it's an outdated word now. So
they meet in a public
A lot
place.
Of people like it. It's
a meet up and chat.
Yeah.
Like a group of people or a couple.
Oh,
I don't know, you're speaking
group.
To the wrong girl.
But it's like a social, it's a social event, like for anything else. Like it could be for,
paganism,
you know.
Paganism or something.
A part for?
Paganism or something.
Oh, yeah, or anything. I
like
mean,
meet up,
people
the
that want to talk about, I don't know, beer or Shakespeare or something, if you want to talk about
Check
something
off.
But there was a man Check with off. A certain top on in there.
Oh yeah, right. So I meet this guy and he isn't a serial killer and he's actually really nice and we get on and I was like, okay, this is fine. And this is it's called the DVS Munch in Leadenhall Street in central London, and I was like, okay, this is fine. And we go downstairs because it's this old bank and it's this beautiful building and there's I think it's like a Revolutions now or something. Anyway, it is. Anyway, so we go down and I was like, oh, I don't know if all these people are for me, actually, because there was a guy in the corner who was this really big, bald guy in a big T-shirt that said, I heart fisting. And he was...
You haven't been losing weight, have you?
I heart
so
fisting.
I thought I recognised you. Anyway... He was like quite intense, and
oh,
had
you would
this
be with a t-shirt like that,
right?
So I do not sell organic cotton. I heart fisting.
Yeah, for sure.
Just like,
new market.
I know. Wow. And I wasn't equipped at the time with the knowledge that I am now to sort of you know understand people as well then. But he still was quite full on, and he had all these like things draped around his belt, like including his dog bowl that he was drinking Red Bull from that his mistress.
Wow. No, 1 minute, slowly. Just a dog bowl.
I know, so he can't cope with the dog bowl. It's fine. Anyway, he was drinking his Red Bull out of that when he was allowed to, which was poured for him by his mistress. And I was just like really interested.
Poured for him by his mistress.
Yeah, so he was only allowed to drink when he was allowed to as this dog. So that was fine.
Did he have the collar and everything?
I don't think he had maybe he did have a collar on. There were other people with collars and leashes on and sat around, but
was he
honestly,
house trained?
It wasn't. Yes, he was house trained. But it wasn't like everybody was sat out in normal clothes and it was a normal situation. It wasn't a kink event, you know. It was just as if it was an after works drinks, you know. That's all I could
with
explain.
Dog bowls.
With dog bowls. Yeah. But that was kind of cool to see that behavior like being exhibited and being so liberal to exist and happen. I was like, this is cool. But I didn't really know if that was for me. And then like a couple of other things that I went to later, I met people who were like maybe a bit more my age and a bit more interested in what I was interested in. And I was like, okay, now I found my people. This is cool. Mm. So then I was like, okay, yeah, this is for me.
So the first nightclub you went to.
Oh, yeah. So that munch was attached to a night. So basically you can go to these socials to maybe meet people that will be going to the event. So then you like aren't so like, oh, there's all these people here that I don't know, I guess. And so I went to that, but I went on my own.
Do you have to put a lot of thought into what you're going to wear on something
yes,
like that?
Yes, you do. There's usually strict dress codes to these things that are like... I can't say fetish, can I? It's kink or fetish dress, because fetish is a dress. It's a whole scene. Yeah.
So,
I guess
what were your options?
Say.
What were your main options?
Well, I didn't really know at the time. I had certain underwear that I was going to wear, but I was kind of into more sort of pin-up look at the time, sort of more 1950s kind of look at the time, which is hilarious thinking back on, because it's way more high maintenance than I am now. And I just thought that was something that I was into. And I turned up dressed like I was going to the races.
Like
and then I just had a nice dress on, you know, that was like quite.
Roy Lascott.
Yeah.
I thought you meant like in your tweed.
Oh, right, yeah.
Like a top. Did you have a hat?
No, I didn't. I would have liked to have had a hat.
Yeah. Cheesecake style or more like fast made?
Oh, no. Yeah,
dress.
No, it was more like a sort of, I don't know what you call it, but. But more tighter fitting.
Okay, so the ascot sort of thing.
I guess
I'll
it
tell
was.
You, raw ascot.
Or like a Bardo top, you know. Yeah. Anyway, hysterical because everyone else is in like full black. And I was like, oh. But anyway, I totally had a great time. I just sort of was a bit nervous to start with, but I'm obviously not the shyest person in the world. So
well,
I just got stuck in.
You got played that night with a dungeon
I
monitor.
Did.
Sex on the sex swing.
Had some sex on the sex swing, yeah.
Sex on the sex
I'd
swing.
I've never had sex on a sex swing.
What's
before.
A sex swing?
It's exactly what it sounds like.
One of them.
You had one?
Yeah. Oh, did you? Yeah, oh my God.
With my wife in America.
Yay. I ain't been living life out of here, man.
We had it attached to a squat.
Did you give him a demo?
We had it attached to...
Right. So.
We had it attached to a squat rack.
A squat rack.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing. So it's not like a swing like in the park. Yeah, it's right. Like she's on a lying down.
So you attach it like from the ceiling.
Yeah, in four.
Yeah. And you...
Lie on it.
Yeah.
On your back.
Yeah. So
it means that somebody can be fucking you whilst they're standing up, basically.
Oh, that's
and you're lying down.
You don't want to
be quite back. Tugger's going
to... I'm quite versatile, me. I could...
Oh, yeah. I'm going to go up your flat soon and there's going to be this little fucking
Tugger,
swing.
Tugger, you do both ways then, right? Huh? You do both ways.
No, me, I only swing one way, me.
Which way?
I like women.
Kaz is like, I'll change that.
Which way do you swing on the swing?
Oh, I've never been on a swing. I've never been on a swing.
Young lady, there's like many positions. That's what you said.
That's what I mean. I'm versatile. I like many positions as well.
Flexible.
I'm a man of many positions. Yeah. I don't need the swing.
As long as it's doing the penetrating. Which is fine.
Boring, but fine.
Anyway, yeah, that was fun. That was fun.
No, let's keep going. I want to hear more about this club night.
What
happened at the club night?
Well, there's a lot of different clubs out there. I hadn't really found my sort of vibe by that point, but I was like, okay, this is a whole like thrilling scene that exists.
But can I ask you one thing?
Oh my God, what?
Fivesome in the bath.
That was a private party. That was my first private party. So that dungeon monitor I sort of saw for a couple of times, and he invited me to meet.
With a dungeon monitor?
Yeah, so that is somebody who regulates the place and makes sure that everybody's having a good time. And
someone regulates the fivesome?
No, this is before this. Oh. So a dungeon monitor or a DM is somebody who works at a club night, a sex club night, and is not part of... He, by the way, when we did play, he was like off duty. I just point out. So if you're on duty, you.
Bad luck for him.
Yeah.
He's like an overseer.
Yeah, make sure that everybody is okay. It's a lifeguard. I like that. Yeah.
Someone might get stuck on the swing.
The sex guard.
Yeah. Stranger things has happened at sex.
Exactly.
Shit. I'll get the gist.
So safety, but also everybody being consensual and like not too, everyone's in control of what they're doing and making sure that everyone's okay. So it's great. And you know what I'd love to say is that, times when I've been out to like the club in, when I was younger, like just like normal clubbing.
Yeah.
I've had way worse experiences of people touching me inappropriately. Yeah. Like non-consensual practices, guys being gross and not respectful about consent.
It's a good point.
In way more situations.
I've had a friend.
In fact, 100% more situations than in
the meat markets, a lot of those places.
Do you know what's happened to a friend once of mine? She was stood at a bar buying a drink. A guy went up her skirt, straight up.
It's horrific.
Fuck's sake. It's ridiculous.
It's disgusting.
Look what's happening up north now with the spiking the drinks and everything like that. It's fucking ridiculous.
If that happened in a sex club, you'd be thrown out immediately. Everyone would know who you were. And also,
you'd be
disgraced. There's a huge sense of community, and you can't get away with that behaviour.
You'd be put in that dungeon and tortured to death.
You know what? It's a very good point what you said there, because like what you said, you'd be disrespected in a normal club.
But it's not just about that. It's about the heteronormative way of men dealing with women in that way, and that
absolutely.
They're objects and that they're to be objectified. Whereas in the kink scene, there's a lot more sense of equality, not just between men and women, but with everybody, queer people as well as straight people. And it's everything is much more tolerated.
Good.
And that's what's amazing about it.
It's a safe space.
But what's problematic is people like the fucking council are terrified by these things going on because they're like, oh well, we can't have that happening in our borough.
Don't you think England's too conservative with sex altogether?
Yeah,
I think in England it's just like, no sex, we're British. I think it's just, and one of the only countries like that, they're really old school when it comes to that.
And America's got some extremes as well. And the more you suppress something, the more it comes out abnormally.
Like extreme ends.
Yeah.
100%.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's just about learning about tolerance on all levels. Yeah.
So you had a good night that night then, but you hadn't quite found your
clique. I hadn't quite found my people, but I saw that guy a couple of times after that, and he took me to my first private party, which I was a real like eye-opener experience, and I sort of threw myself into that. What outfit was it that night? What did I wear? Some sort of like interesting lacy body thing. I think it was a bit more lingerie. I wasn't really into latex then. But I'm not really into that now because it's really like difficult on my skin. I've got really sensitive skin, so I don't really... It looks amazing on other people. I don't think it looks like
I've never been a fan of latex.
Really. Yeah, no. It's kind of, it's each for their own.
Really. I like laundry. I'm a laundry man.
Oh, yeah?
Laundry?
Yeah, I thought you said laundry.
I like, on
laundry.
Women.
Laundry.
Yeah.
I thought you said laundry.
You're saying like the laundry.
Yeah. The laundrette, babe.
It's my Hackney accent.
Yeah. So, that was really interesting. And I had like people sucking my toes for the first time.
Oh, wow.
And like, I was like, well, this is good. How have I not done this before? This feels amazing. And then, these people had the most amazing flat. It was beautiful. It was in Old Street. And they had this, this amazing bathroom. And like, five of us had sex in the bath and it was great.
Would you recommend?
Super hot. Yeah. Group sex. I hadn't had group sex before.
Five.
There was only enough room for five. it was a big old bat. So that was really fun. And then, I was like, okay, this is something that I could definitely get involved in. But you have to make sure that you're not too wasted or not too high and make sure that you're in control of your environment and take like personal responsibility for that because, can get quite hedonistic.
So this obviously led you on to your Dom career.
I guess so, yeah. It's something that's always been in me, I guess. I've always been very switchy, but in my relationships and my relationships with men, I've often been more submissive, I have to say. But I enjoyed that because I think for so long in my life, I've always had to feel so in control and be really independent. And it's really nice to like relinquish that, which is why people enjoy being submissive. So I think it is quite important to have all those, that knowledge and those skills, having been a submissive, in order to then turn it the other way around. I'm always quite wary of people that are 100% dom through and through. I've always been a dom and I'm a man and I wear a suit and I'm good. Oh yeah, 100% sir. Are you lazy?
Cashew nuts.
Likes cashews.
Likes cashews.
Yeah, I think, yeah. I mean, obviously, this is what, everyone's entitled to what they enjoy and it's in with like sexuality and I'm just like, 100% straight. I'm like, now if I see a straight guy on a dating app, I'm like, oh, come on. I'm not on
like
everyone's
a finger
straight.
At the
bum. Is this more interesting if you're more fluid? I think. But anyway, it's not for everybody.
So how did you get into it?
How did I get into it? It was a real like light bulb moment in terms of professionally. I'd lost my shitty job in lockdown like everybody else. And I was like, okay, I've had enough of, I actually was going to leave hospitality anyway. Like, in between these acting jobs that were just all right, I was kind of getting fed up of acting. I felt like I had no autonomy over that. I felt like I was never good enough and I'm constantly chasing this thing where people are telling me I'm not good enough, even though I was quite good and good actor. And I was like, God, this is so hard in a world where people can succeed at something that aren't necessarily very good at it. Mm-hmm. Whereas I was discovering with kink and stuff, like you have to be good at it to be good at it. Like you can't be shit and somebody will find out pretty quickly, either if you're a dickhead, if you're bad with consent, if you're a consent violator, or if you're just like not very good at what you're doing or care very much. So it was like a world that I really was interested in and that I was good at, and that I'm tall, that was a big factor. And I was in a relationship with somebody, and in my past, a non-monogamous relationship, by the way. Both of us had never been in a non-monogamous relationship before and would been interested in seeing what that was like. Now, we're
Can
not poly.
Sorry.
Okay, so we would say our relationship is non-monogamous, but emotionally monogamous, so that we don't have other boyfriends or girlfriends
so
or partners.
What's the difference between the two?
Well, it's a very big umbrella. So polyamory is sort of multiple partners, either hierarchical or non-hierarchical. Some people are both or neither, but some people who are polyamorous have a primary partner or a nesting partner and other partners around that. I'm not naturally that way inclined. I would say I've always been interested in the idea of being able to be with somebody and we explore things together, or maybe sometimes on your own you'd be like, oh, quite fancy that person, that might be quite fun, or something. But as a bonus, yeah, an open relationship, but sometimes that can involve, I mean, it's such a minefield. Like, there are so many levels to this. Whatever it is, it's communicative, it's honest, it's open, it's talked about. You discuss everything and you talk about everything and you flow together, like all relationships should be. You know, everything is constant and flowing. I find that monogamy tends to put this idea that everything is like a given and you don't have to discuss things. It's like linear. It's like, okay, well, we're together now, then maybe we'll get, you know, a dog, and then we'll move in together, and then we'll get married. But we won't talk about any of those things, and that's just
and repress our feelings, and then we'll divorce.
Yeah, maybe, but that's maybe a bit too flippant. But anyway, I just think that people don't discuss their relationships enough as a continuous thing, because people change and grow,
that's right.
If you change and grow together, then that's great. But it's also about the fact that you're not dependent on the other person; you're your own person, and you're living your own life, and the other people in your life should be a bonus to your life. It's not like about a need, it's like a want to be together, if that makes
yeah,
sense.
Of course.
And deserved and respected and earned, right?
Of course.
So I mean, it's all learning and growing, by the way. I mean, it's not easy. I just like to point that out. It's not an easy thing. It's fucking hard work. But then every relationship is hard work. Jealousy is a whole other topic that we should spend 3 hours on instead of one. But it's jealousy is a completely normal thing and shouldn't be repressed and shouldn't be discredited.
It's a healthy thing.
It's a really healthy thing, but it's about what that jealousy is. Yeah, jealousy from your own insecurity, yeah, or jealousy about what does that mean? What non-monogamy has taught me is to look inwardly a lot more about what it is that makes me insecure and how to fix that myself instead of relying on other people to fix that for me.
Of course.
So your boyfriend and your parents knew about your career choice, didn't it?
Yeah, I found that I didn't want to hide anything from them. My dad was quite chill with it. My mum was just more worried about my safety. My dad is just like, I trust you, I think you'll be fine, you're a big girl. And my mum was, yeah, definitely a bit more worried. I think as well, I'm the only child and the only daughter, and she had gone through so much loss. She didn't want to have to lose another child in a dangerous way in case anything got dangerous, which is a completely fair enough point, because I call myself a sex worker. I don't have sex with my clients. A lot of dominatrixes do, and that's totally fine, but classically not. But, you know, there's a huge stigma still surrounding sex work, and a lot of sex workers are at risk all the time, and that shouldn't be the case. And a lot of sex workers do lose their lives, and that's not okay.
Hence why me and Kaz are doing what
precisely.
We're doing.
Yeah. But we're also totally normal people and that do a totally normal thing and should be protected because of that, you know.
Did you have to do training for it?
I guess the
School of Domination.
Yeah. There is that.
Master Pete.
Yeah, Master Peter. So yes, we know him
very well.
Yeah, so he does, training. And he did actually mention me when I was starting out. I sort of subbed for him. I was his bottom, so to speak, literally and physically, when he was training.
I know. I think you whip his arms.
He's a powerful, scary man, though.
When he wants
we need to get
be.
Master Peter on the podcast.
Oh, you should.
I met him. Yeah, he's lovely. Yeah.
Really, much more succinctly than I can.
The way he speaks is very, yeah.
So he bossed me around the dungeon. He is an educator. And showed how to, what was it? How would you describe it, James? When Master Peter...
He kind of led you around, didn't he?
And
he had his hair
showed
hair
how to hair pull?
Yeah, 101 on some impact play and stuff. Yeah. It's just quite funny because it's not.
Don't pull my hair, they're extensions. It costs too much.
But it's not too dissimilar to like combat training in acting, because you have to learn how to pull people's
like,
hair
to move
correctly.
People in a certain way.
Exactly.
It was mental.
So, yeah, it was really nice to be able to do something. Oh, yeah, the light bulb moment. And also, just to go back, the light bulb moment doing this was, you know, having the blessing from my partner who was like, I think you'd be really good at this. And not being, you know, possessive or jealous or ridiculous about it, being like just caring for my safety and my well-being versus the threat to his masculinity. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So that was really cool. He's a great guy. And I was just like, yeah, God, I can use all of my acting skills. It's basically all theatre. I watched an amazing documentary called Fetishes from 1996. if I'm allowed to say that. If I'm not, we'll cut it. But there's this amazing documentary. I can't remember who it's by, but it's like an old-fashioned Louis Theroux type guy, which is a bit annoying because it is a bit like, ooh, look at all these people doing this weird thing. So that kind of annoys me. But the women in it are amazing. They work at Pandora's Box in New York, and there's Mistress Raven and all of her her doms, and they are the most amazing women. And I was hooked on this from that. That was a real a sort of leaping, bouncing board. What's the word I'm looking for when you?
Well, like uplifting, you mean?
Or I just like a sort of. I was like, yeah, I want to do that. You know, I'd be good at that. I can see myself doing
influential.
That. It's influential. Yeah. And I was like, I've got all these skills that is required, I think. But yeah, I mean, you do definitely need training. I mean, whipping takes years. I am in no way an expert on anything yet. And I would never call myself that. Because I wouldn't feel like I feel weird even being here. It's weird to me.
So what was it like actually going out and
doing your first session?
Oh my God, absolutely terrifying. It's like, basically, when I finished, I was like, it's like doing a play. It was the exhilaration and the nerve wracking. You're basically going on stage. You're being, well, he'd never seen a dom before. He's just like a young 28 year old sort of city guy that wanted the experience. I think he just sort of fancied me probably. and brought a bottle of champagne. That was quite helpful.
Oh,
and we just had an hour of playing with different things. Like, it was quite an easy, like,
dog
kind
balls.
Of intro session. Yeah. Yeah. He came into one.
What?
I made sure I asked him to, because I was like, oh, you're not making a mess.
You've got
a rat thing for
dog bowls,
yeah, maybe I do.
You come in the dog bowl.
Yeah, I made him. Yeah, I was
did
like,
he
you're
eat
not making a mess.
What happened?
I made him eat it.
This has been our leitmotif.
You made him eat.
I made him eat it.
You made him eat his own cum.
Whoa.
Oh, you've never eaten your own cum. Oh, God.
Trailer.
I haven't. No.
We're a team.
I didn't know it was edible. Fucking hell.
Babe, you've got so much to learn about yourself.
You think so?
Yeah, what? Why not?
We thought we knew it all.
Yeah.
I don't think I need to learn that part then.
Have you made somebody else eat your own
Sorry,
cum?
Even.
Yeah.
So why shouldn't you?
Because... I like the other person's opinion.
Right. Cool. Sounds fair.
Shane, you've got to tell Tugger. We're going to have a 5-minute creep out on Tugger of the crazy shit you've done.
Oh, God.
Go on.
Have we just spent 2 hours talking
about that? We'll talk about the stingers.
Okay, so I think definitely, I mean, I have realised this. I mean, it's been a year of an amazing time and a really fun time, considering also during a pandemic. I don't know how I've managed to do as well as I have. I genuinely don't. But I'm a guarantee that your stories will outweigh mine by
You're
craziness.
Amazing, though.
By 10.
How long have you been doing this?
I've only been doing it professionally since, a year or whatever it is.
You're an absolute natural. I think you're born for so many great things. Well, I'm not going to say you're born for this, because you're born for many, many great things. And this is just one string to your bow.
That's so nice.
In the whole hierarchy of everything.
I think that's life, though, isn't it? I think we shouldn't focus on... Yeah. I think capitalism makes us focus on linear exponential success. And fucking private school makes you think that's what's important. But what's success is a roundness and a fullness and a richness of life, and being really good at life and living and accepting life and loving life. And
definitely.
That's what life should be about. Life should go this way, not this way.
I think we've all in this room, I don't want to speak for everyone, but I've learned some stuff off you today. Has everyone else?
Definitely. Buy a dog bowl.
Don't buy a dog bowl.
Pets at home. You all have such rich, interesting, fascinating lives that I'd much rather talk about.
Have you ever heard of a guy called Latex Trooper?
Oh, no! Who's that?
Kaz, can you please tell Tugger about the stinger story? The two stinger stories.
Which one? The stinger nettles?
Yeah. Oh, yes!
Okay.
I need to hear this.
Have you done nettle fetish yet?
No, yet. I was fascinated. Sounds better when you say
battery.
Move your mic.
To which position?
Near your mouth.
Near your mouth.
Near your gob.
Oh, towards me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. How's that, not over your chin.
Okay.
Just look.
How's that, darling?
There you go. Yeah.
Right. Restart. Right.
So, can I just start by asking Mistress Jane?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you played with nettles yourself yet?
No, and I'm dying to now.
What is it, sorry?
Well, stinging nettles.
Nettles.
I think normally they grow sort of around summertime, don't they?
Yeah.
So it's the best time. So when they're next in growth, do come around and see me, and maybe we can.
I will be there.
So I've had a few slaves. They're into this fetish. So the fetish is basically they like the. They're kind of masochists. They like the pain of the stinging nettles upon them. But I think there's a bit of, would you say, a bit of humiliation there as well, maybe?
The idea of someone beating you with nettles, it's quite silly as a concept, isn't it?
So definitely. Yes, so I think they're quite prepared to let go just to be the like uninhibited, humiliated, and just experience some abject silliness. Mm-hmm. Sorry, silliness even. The wine. So the first one I encountered just wore this kind of like skin tight latex cat suit all the way down to his ankles, up to his neck. And the goal of the game was to just stuff all these freshly picked stinging nettles down, unzip it, stuck them down, and then he had to roll all over the floor just to make them like stick in deeper so they really get into the skin then.
How did you not get stung?
Well, we wore rubber gloves, there was two of us. We had these black latex gloves. We didn't
clever,
care.
You.
That makes sense. Yeah. I was going to say,
like, head of the game here, Kaz.
Darling, I don't suffer for my art.
My life is my art. My art is my life.
We take precautions.
Yes, so, I like it.
So that was kind of a little bit
that's
weird.
That's for the customers.
If that's his king.
So what was the objective? Was he had to roll around and make himself more stung?
Yes. And just make himself feel rich. And I said to him afterwards, I said, so what do you actually get out of this? I understand that you're a bit masochistic. You enjoy the pain. When you go home and you just sore, what's your mindset? And he said, I like having a memento from the session and a reminder of what I've put myself through for my mistresses.
Yeah, that's why I like impact for that and giving bruises. Yeah. I love that, for that.
So it all comes into play, does it?
Oh, definitely. That's so cool. And what about the other time?
Yeah, and the second time, we popped a speculum, different guy, in his bottom to open him up. Yeah, and then rubber gloves, I must say, rubber gloves again, always.
What did you pop?
A speculum.
What?
So you know when a lady goes for a smear test?
Yeah.
And they pop a little spectacle in and open it up.
That was Tugger.
Right.
Well, metal he brought one of these with him.
Right.
So he could pop it in, open him up.
Pop it in what?
His arsehole, Tugger.
Yeah, I like to be specific here because I want to know what the popping is.
Bottom.
Huh?
Bottom.
He put it up his arsehole.
Up his arse.
Right.
Yep.
The nettle went in.
Got the nettle.
You put it in.
Yeah, we
popped the nettle in the butt.
But we're taking it quite slowly. We're like tickling it round.
Slowly, slowly.
Is that okay? He was like, yeah, just stuff them in, give them to me. And we're like,
oh, shit.
Okay, all right, fine. Yep, here we go. Get us.
How many are we talking here?
Well, we had about three bagfuls.
Three bags.
Black
sheet. I was just about to say. Butthole. Oh, wow. God, that's loads.
It's quite huge.
That is.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. That must really, really hurt.
I kept looking at his face, expecting him to go, stop.
Stop. But even if you stop, like, that pain is so continuous. Yeah, God, that's fascinating.
That's what.
Don't you just love people?
About it. Yeah. That's the thing, you know, when you're like, expecting someone to just break down in front of you, and the minute they just don't, they're like, give me more. I'm like,
yeah, kink is a real avenue of strength, and it's, you know, people do like, it's a very subversive space and a liminal space where you cross this threshold to, like, be able to exist. And as a human being in a way that society tells you you're not allowed to normally. And that is so freeing.
What's the most bizarre demands you've had?
Oh, licking baby food off my toes. I mean, that doesn't sound that honestly, I honestly haven't had that many crazy requests. A lot of people want to like get a piggyback off me, which I don't do. I don't do anything like wrestling or anything that could put me in a vulnerable position. I don't do, but I get a lot of requests for piggybacks.
So is this men that want to feel vulnerable and small, do you think?
Yeah, I guess so. Wrestling is an interesting one. There's a really cool dom called Anastasia that does a lot of wrestling, and she's going to teach me how to do it properly. But I sort of don't want to put myself in a position like where I could be. Because you only need to do about 2 or 3 holds that they're like particularly after. But when you're like big and tall and strong like me, that's what often can be the case. But I would rather use that in impact. That's more like. It's controlled, you know. I feel much more in control of that. Definitely. But yeah, I don't think I've had anything crazy asked of me. I wouldn't do anything extreme or anything I wouldn't feel comfortable with just for the sake of doing it, because I think that's wrong. At the stage that I'm at, I would need the experience to do it first. I'm not going to do something I don't think I could be good
at doing. Can I ask what mummification is?
Oh, mummification. So that is the wrapping of the body in like basically black cling film or a cling film. Well, it's called palette wrap. You get pallets that are wrapped in this stuff, and that's what they want to be wrapped in.
Like,
but you can use cling film as well. Well, yeah. That's the point.
But not to the point of actual suffocation.
Are these people like to be close to passing out or something?
So it's called
breath
play, which is a kind of edge play.
Breath play.
So that is what, you know, a lot of breath play has been involved in unfortunate incidents in the past where people...
In excess.
Exactly. Loved him. Anyway, yes, that is, you know, a bad example of that going wrong. But when that's in a controlled environment with somebody who knows what they're doing, obviously it's a very euphoric experience, etc. But it's also a sense of being restricted and not being able to move and being at the mercy or the will of somebody else. And that's just complete submission, basically. You know, you're giving that over.
Do you
know what is funny as fuck is getting them to that place in the first place, because you have to wrap them up and it's the least glamorous thing ever.
Can you do the little turn?
You have to get it like under the butt, you're like, whoa. And these are like, you know, not small people. Usually. It's very unglamorous.
Do you have contingency plans for a medical emergency?
Of course, yeah. But in that sense, I would never ever put myself or the person in a position where that wouldn't, for example, if I'm doing impact with somebody that is hitting them with an instrument, and they're being tied to something. My friend Connor off of Paraphilia magazine, who I worked on with that, I was his assistant on this amazing magazine called Paraphilia, which is a contemporary, asked the question, what is contemporary BDSM? So basically my whole thing is like the advocate of the contemporization of BDSM, because I think it could do with being brought into the 21st century a bit more. Anyway, my friend Connor, who's an amazing rope and shibari artist, said, what if they faint? That's the question you should always ask yourself. What if they faint, will they fall? So make sure people are always in a stable position, that if anything happened to them, if they like lost, you know, consciousness, which hopefully they won't do, they wouldn't be in a position where they would fall and hit their head. So that is a question that you always ask yourself. If somebody's in bondage or if somebody's restrained, make sure that if they fell or if they passed out, that they wouldn't be hurt, basically. So that's the thing. Safety is hugely paramount. Like I say, I would never engage in a activity where I didn't feel comfortable knowing what I was doing.
So you're not going to invest in one of those things they put you in?
Oh yeah. Kinks include hyperbaric chambers. 20 grand that cost me.
20.
Thank God for travel insurance.
Well,
it was about $800 an hour and I was down there for like 15 hours plus all the care. I had the best. Wow. I was so lucky. I had amazing care. I was very, very lucky.
Thank God you lived.
Thank God for travel insurance. Get travel insurance.
So what is your goal with this now? You're expanding your operation.
I mean, it's really interesting because part of me is like, obviously I still want to do things with theatre and acting, and I do. I'm as much an advocate for the contemporization of BDSM, but also like for the liberation of people who are kinky within the arts, because I think it can be such a stigma still. It's like a final frontier. Like, you know, we might have the aesthetic in the world at the minute, like Kim Kardashian, like covering herself in like fetish clothing. But if people were found out to be into kink, they would probably lose their jobs. Still, people don't put their faces on apps and they're scared of losing their job. Yeah. It's ridiculous. Mm. You know, I think it's absolutely ridiculous. So I always found it a struggle to be...
Well, people should be allowed to be themselves.
Precisely. And it doesn't affect how I do my job. It's like in the 70s, people were losing their jobs for being gay. I mean, it's ridiculous. So we're still in that place. We'll hopefully get out of that place, or, you know, the stigmatization surrounding sex work and the police taking sex workers more seriously and everything like that. There's still a lot to do. But, I would like to combine both those worlds. So my background in theatre, my background in acting, and my passion and love for kink and the curation of BDSM. I want to run a studio space and have my own space, not just as a dungeon, but as like an art space that's either queer positive or sex positive for people who are kinky, that are also musicians, artists, photographers, other DOMs, sex workers that need a safe space that isn't a fucking fortune in London. That's what I want to do. Well, I know, but but you know, it's private. It isn't council run, because the council are always like my friends at Verboten are just, which is a amazing fetish club, are who work so hard to cement the existence of it in safe consensual play. Anyway, they're loggerheads with the council all the time, and it's ridiculous because it should be able
You've
to
You've
got
to have the dream to make it come true.
Yeah, and yeah. They have the drive, and I would like that. So somehow my goal is to get investment to have the space in a couple of years' time. Clink. So that's what I would like to do. Yeah, that's my plan.
So, Togo, what do you think about kink?
In what way?
Well, what you've heard today.
Well, kink is... It's been around. It's nothing new, is it?
No.
It's nothing new.
You could invest in sex swing?
Nah. Nah. I mean, there's nothing wrong with people wanting to do themselves. It's been around from hundreds and thousands of years ago, really. It's nothing new. Everyone's different. I believe everyone's different. I've got my own opinion about some of the stuff people request to get done.
Like what?
Like what?
I believe some of the people requesting, I think it's some mental health involved there. My
like
opinion.
What?
Like, when people want to be wrapped up like a mummy, someone's not well there. I mean, that's my opinion. I think there's a thin line between doing kinky stuff and doing something a bit. That's just how I feel about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, sure. I think it'd be interesting
because I think we want to talk about this on a level of creating awareness in a good way for people, and mental health is a big topic of it. But I think there's still it's a bit of a thin line between some of the, like even you yourself as a worker, you still could be in danger when you go to
but
see
don't
some
you
clients
think that,
and stuff.
That this what's dangerous surrounding the topic of me being in danger stems from, now let me say this right because I want it's a really important factor in all of this and I feel like I'm going to get it wrong because I feel so passionately about it.
Yeah,
what is dangerous is the attitude surrounding it and somebody going oh you want to be wrapped in cling film, that's mental. That to me is a bit more dangerous than thinking, oh, well, let's take a step back and think why that person's into that.
That's right. I think that's my question. Why does that person feel he wants to be wrapped in cling film?
Yeah, but that's not a dangerous question. That's a really interesting psychological question.
It's not just interesting. It could be detrimental to the person, depending why he wants.
I don't know why you think that.
Because depending
really
on why,
way.
Because oh, we don't, now. Because we don't know why that person's thinking like
but
that.
But why that specifically? I think that is one of the most safest and
Jane, is it? Can I ask you? Is it even sexual? Can
it's
send
not
back to
what do you
some
mean?
Kind of
that's
comfort?
Not
yeah, no, but
thing.
just the nature,
yeah, exactly.
Just the nature of it. Yeah. It stems from somewhere. To me, it stems from somewhere of an uncomfortable place. It's maybe a demon or
but
something.
Is it what's uncomfortable about them? Or are you projecting onto yourself because you?
No,
find
not but projecting onto myself. I'm giving my opinion on these people. Maybe them getting it done is not the answer.
But I think you're projecting your opinion on them rather than what you think.
I'm not projecting my opinion on them.
I think you're projecting your fear.
I see both sides here.
I haven't got no fear. I just think because mental health is real.
Mental health is real.
So if the weirder the stuff people request, there's issues behind that. That's my opinion.
So are you saying that if someone's into a kink, they've got a mental health issue?
No, if someone wants to be no, it's to let no. I someone no, not at all. I'm kinky. I might be the most kinky motherfucker in this room. Don't get it twisted. But it's the level. And that name. I'm an animal. Why is that? It's the level of kink we're talking about. I get down the way I get down. Right, do you understand where I'm coming from?
So, call your wife. Yeah. Get your wife. Wait.
Say again.
Just to play devil's advocate. Yeah. I'm not disagreeing with you. Mm. So what if someone's into feet? And the other person's into latex.
Cuss,
cuss.
That's right. I don't mean that deep. It's just when she said rap like a mummy and think because people have got some very extreme things.
But that's extreme to you, right?
It's extreme to you.
It's not sexual to me, and it's extreme. And it's that. I like what you said. It's dangerous. So
it's only dangerous if it's done incorrectly. But who's walking on the pavement?
I know, but I don't think something so dangerous if it's done incorrectly. Loads of things can be done incorrectly and be dangerous. I think it's
taking
better to
drugs
be avoided.
Is dangerous if it's done incorrectly.
Yeah, that's why it's better to be avoided.
I think it could go both ways.
Exactly. I can. So when something is potentially dangerous.
You shouldn't do it.
No.
Exactly.
But everything's dangerous.
Everything I think that's silly to say.
So, no, I'm not saying the person can't do it.
Can be dangerous.
But if the person wants to do it, that's a that I didn't say mental health. Maybe a mental incapacity might be the
one. So you can say that about anything.
Jen's kink coming out. Oh, no, we can't talk.
Wait.
We can't talk over each other.
No, you're getting me twisted. I don't. I mean, certain levels of it to me.
No one wants to hear my kink.
Some of it's so extreme to me. Yeah. I honestly think that there's some mental health somewhere along the line. My opinion.
I think that it could be therapeutic. Well, it could be dangerous if the person has a serious mental health issue.
Exactly.
That it's a symptom of.
And what my point is, Sean, in this day and age, mental health is so, so real.
Yeah, a
lot of people suffering from it and in all different ways.
Yeah.
So it's very delicate.
But the thing is, if that person doesn't enable this to come out of them with you and suppresses it, it could become even more problematic.
True.
You could be
a doctor for these people.
I think it is, of course.
Because you're not having sex with them, you're doing things with them.
Yeah, but even if you were having sex with them, even people who are escorts and companions, it's still some form of therapy to these people who need company and who need direction
Absolutely.
And need an outlet to
Absolutely.
The whatever they want to express, as long as it's done healthily and consensually.
As long as it's done healthily and consensually.
But that's like should that's, be the
that's
case
the
for
big,
anything.
That's the big as and if is a big
but
word.
That, that's what we're talking
about.
So who
should police this?
Yeah, who should police this?
I don't know.
Read Revolting Prostitutes by Juno Mack.
Should the police this?
I don't know. Like,
does anyone here like the police?
Who can police?
Oh, don't.
No one can police that. No one can really do it. The thing is, even though this, how can someone
cop outfit and I'll police it?
How can someone police their own personal life? It's personal.
Please read this book.
Why are we taking this podcast? We've gone next level.
I would really like for everybody to read this book.
Yeah, I'm going to get that on my Kindle.
Revolting Prostitutes: The Fight for Sex Workers' Rights by Molly Smith and Juno Mack. Everybody read this if they're interested in sex workers' rights, which you should be. Read the book.
Now, Jen, 5 minutes ago, announced she wants to reveal her kink.
Ooh! Ooh! Fucking interesting.
Everyone's kink is interesting.
I was just going to make a point, like, on both sides. My kink is fucking in the rain, right?
Is what?
Fucking in the rain.
In the rain?
Yeah.
That's good.
So, but what is it could be a mental health risk if it was acid rain.
What if there was a flash?
Acid rain? Where are you going to get acid rain?
What if it's a monster?
Where are you going to get acid rain?
Be hallucinogenic.
You're not going to get acid rain unless you're in some stuff. Some tropical. I don't know. Where'd you get acid rain?
My town. My hometown.
That's really safe.
Fucking.
They invented the roofs for double-decker buses in my town because of the acid rain.
Really?
It's a chemical manufacturing town.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In Arizona. Yeah.
Right by St. Helens.
Oh, right by St. Helens.
So there's sex and witness.
Ask Jen about a visit to my town.
I think sex in the rain is pretty safe. As long as it's not acid rain.
As long as you're not in with Ness.
That's what I mean. There's so many different types. That's why, please do not say I'm anti-kink. I'm not.
I didn't say you're anti-kink.
There's so many different types of fetishes and kinks. Like, you just said did you start off by saying it was boring or something?
No, it's a bit, it might be considered vanilla. It might not be extreme, but I just
it's fascinating. It is what it is.
Yeah, water sex. Yeah.
A lot of people think kink and BDSM has to be extreme. It's not dangerous.
You might get a cold. The only thing you might have is pneumonia.
So, in the rain, in what environment then? What would be underneath you?
It's not just rain. It's
on
water
the beach,
sex.
On the grass. On
not the beach. You get sand in you.
Yeah, or in the sea. In the sea, it's
water
a bit too.
Sex.
Bath.
In water.
In the water.
It's quite kinky. Yeah.
Hot bath. Not so much. Cold rain. Cold water.
Jacuzzi.
Considerably.
Bubbles.
Do you like
right,
anyway.
I was in one of
I've done it in the swimming pool in a hotel in Torquay.
Okay,
so swimming pool I've done it in. Beach, yes, but the sand is not good.
Sand is a no-go for me.
Yeah, it's disgusting. You're getting it out fucking days. Western Supermare Beach.
It's quite pebbly though, isn't it? You don't get pebbles.
So basically you're an exhibitionist.
No, it's sandy, that one. I think so. Yeah, there we go.
Big exhibitionist.
Yeah. I've got a funny story about that, actually. I'll give you this one. I was having sex outdoors in a park. Yeah, I was really quite young. Not too young, obviously. And I was having sex with my boyfriend at the time. And I could smell this really fucking funny smell. And I was like, what's that smell? What's that smell? Anyway, he lifted his hand up. He was on top and it just had a load of dog shit on it.
Oh, no, that isn't nice.
I was like, we got to stop this now. And I had my cousin's jacket on. And he just wiped it all over. Yeah. And put me off.
No! I'll ask you a question.
Have you met people with fetishes for these kind of things? Dog poo? Because you've met people with the dog bowls and the dog food.
Yeah, anything to do with animals or children is obviously off limits. Yeah.
Right. But they exist, right?
Well, that's not...
You just don't do it. But no, it's out there, right?
People are into fecal matter.
No, but it exists.
Oh, yeah, fecal matter. That's what I mean. Human fecal matter. I'm not interested in that and I don't offer that. But
thank God.
Well, not thank God the people that are and that are interested in that, that's fine. But
I don't think he is.
Well, I've not met any female doms that are.
Yeah, no, there are. No, I haven't. But there are some that are.
That
but
is
no,
next level.
It is. It's pretty fascinating. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, on that note, probably wrap it up.
It's the party crew.
Mummification. We're going to end with mummification.
We can do.
Wrapping it up.
Hey.
Wrap it up. I'm going to wrap a spliff.
We're all good. We're all good. Has anyone got any final questions, observations?
Mate, I think you'll reveal.
I just like to say this. It's been absolutely ridiculous that we wanted to sit here and talk about my life. Thank you so much.
No, you're welcome.
You are a force of nature, Jane.
Thank you. You are unique.
I've never met anyone like you, honestly. You've blown me away. And we've interviewed a lot of people.
Really?
You've still got so many stories, I can tell.
If you want to see a part two, let us know.
Definitely.
Check out Paraffin.
We're gonna put your Instagram down there if you want to reach out to you.
Yeah, scratch that. Yeah, @Jane_Gray is my Instagram. It's what it is. And then I think it's @_JaneGray. I'm on Twitter. I don't love social media. It's quite fun, but I'm not like massively prolific on there. But it's good. If you want to see a video of a pigeon that lasts 9 seconds long,
it's got 20 million views.
It's viral. It's a viral pigeon.
Stupid viral video.
A pigeon jumping through bread.
Stupid. That's on your TikTok, so is it?
Yeah, but that's like real life TikTok.
That's a real life pigeon. Yeah.
So, just quickly, if anyone is interested in supporting the BDSM community, or if anybody would like to read further about prolific and interesting articles and photography and like modern curation of BDSM, I was asked by my really dear friend Connor to be an assistant editor and just general help on his magazine, which is called Paraphilia. This is the second copy. It's just in print. Oh my God, print magazines these days. So we've got amazing articles, photographs.
We won't show too much of that.
Oh yeah, shit. So this is really great to have your support. And it also exists on the internet as Paraphilia Collective. So come support us, please. Thanks.
Excellent.
And Jen and Kaz have got their own YouTube channel now.
Yes, Kaz and Jen Talks. Check it out.
Nice.
Yeah.
Link will be in the description box below this video.
Oh yeah, I have a website, it's called thejanegray.com.
Wicked.
Right, so please let us know what you thought about this video, if you've had as much of a laugh as if you've learned things. If you did, by no means, please do not show your kinks in the comments.
And, in the live chat, please.
If you want to listen to some dance hall, go and click down on Trudge's channel. And,
or if you'd like to buy
some kinky music. You can get kinky to my music.
Oh, thanks everyone. That was brilliant.
Thank you so much. Great.
Thank you. Yes.
Here at Boomer and Jen, we offer a wide range of organic or recycled clothing. We all know our planet is important. We only have this one. So it's vital that we all work together to slow down and reverse the changes to the environment. Whilst we all know that big industry are having a significant effect on pollution, here at Boomer and Jen, we believe that if we all make small changes, we can do our part. Fast fashion causes detrimental effects to the planet. Not only is nearly 20% of global wastewater produced by the fast fashion industry, but there is a considerable amount of fast fashion ending up in landfill.
So let's move away from fast fashion items that are only worn once or twice and start wearing extremely comfortable, durable, and environmentally friendly clothing and ethical jewellery. Boomer and Jen was founded in a quiet town in Devon in 2018. It has now gone from strength to strength as the world is becoming more aware of the current climate situation, helping our customers to buy sustainable, quality clothing. All of our products are fair trade and registered with the Global Organic Textiles Standard Association. Check us out on organiccottonclothing.co.uk.
This podcast is sponsored by Gadfly Press. We are proud to announce the publication of Britain's number one art forger, Max Brandert, The Life of a Cheeky Faker. And from the back cover blurb, Max the Forger is an artist and gentleman whose colourful lifestyle has spanned over 70 years. He has lived under the strict regime of Bernardo's Children's Homes, been an elephant handler in the circus, lived rough, busked his way from Brighton to Bombay, sold his fakes up and down the country, dined with dukes, socialised with celebrities, associated with gangsters, served time in prison, and donated tens of thousands to charity. And through it all, he has never stopped smiling and loving life and missing his mum. Quote from the book. Mr. Brandert, I do not see you as a malicious criminal, sighed the judge. But why, oh why, do you continue to use your God-given talent in this way? I just can't help myself, Your Honour. It's like an addiction, I grinned. Available worldwide on Amazon. Link in the description box below this video. Thank you for supporting our sponsor.